ಜಯ ಮುಷುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಅಭಯ ಚರಣಾರವಿಂದ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಗೋಸ್ವಾಮಿ ಮಹರ್ಷಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಿ ಜಯಂ ನಿತ್ರಿಲಾ ಪ್ರವಿಷ್ಟ ವಿಷ್ಣುಪಾದ ಪರಮಹಂಸ ಪರಿವ್ರಾಜಕಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಅಷ್ಟೋತ್ತರ ಶತ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀಮಾನ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಮಹರ್ಷಿಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದಿ ಆನಂದಗೋಡಿ ವೈಷ್ಣವ ಬೃಂದಕಿ ನಾಮಾಚಾರ್ಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಹರಿದಾಸ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ಕಿ ಪ್ರೇಮ ಸಹೋ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭೋ ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧಾರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದಕಿ ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ರಾಧಾಕೃಷ್ಣ ಗೋಪ ಗೋವಿನಾಥ ಶ್ಯಾಮಗುಂಡ ರಾಧಾಕುಂಡ ಗಿರಿ ಗೋವರ್ಧಾನಕಿ ವೃಂದಾವನ್ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಾಯಪುರ್ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಮಧುರಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಜಗನ್ನಾಥ್ಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ದ್ವಾರಕಾಪುರಿ ಧಾಮಕಿ ಗಂಗಮಾಯಿಕಿ ಯಮುನಮಾಯಿಕಿ ತುಳಸಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಭಕ್ತಿದೇವಿಕಿ ಸಾಮವೇದ ಭಕ್ತವೃಂದಕಿ ಗೋ ಪ್ರೇಮಾನಂದಿ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ದಿ ಅಸೆಂಬಲ್ ಡಿವೋಟೀಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶ್ರೀ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರುವೆನ್ ಗೌರಂಗ ಆಲ್ ಗ್ಲೋರಿಯಸ್ ಟು ಶೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ ನಮಾಮಿ ಶುಭದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸಾದ ಭೂತಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದಿ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನಿಧಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ ನಮಸ್ತೆ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ದೇವಿಂ ಗೌರವಾಣಿ ಪ್ರಜಾರಿಣೇ ನಿರ್ವಿಶೇಷ ಶೂನ್ಯವಾದಿ ಪಾಶ್ಚಾತ್ಯ ದೇಶಧಾರಿಣೇ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಓಂ ನಮೋ ಭಗವತೆ ವಾಸುದೇವಾಯ ಸಂಸಾರ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮಗ್ನಂ ದೀನಂ ಮಾಂ ಕರುಣಾನಿಧೇ ಕರ್ಮಗ್ರಾಹ ಗೃಹೀತಾಂಗಂ ಮಾಮುದ್ಧರ ಭವಾರ್ಣವಾದ್ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವದಾಖ್ಯೋಯಂ ಪ್ರತ್ಯಕ್ಷ ಕೃಷ್ಣಮೇವ ಹಿ ಸ್ವೀಗತೋಸಿ ಮಯಾ ನಾಥ ಮುಕ್ತ್ಯರ್ಥಂ ಭವ ಸಾಗರೇ ಮನೋರಥೇ ಮದೀಯೋಯಂ ಸಫಲಾ ಸರ್ವದಾ ತ್ವಯ ನಿರ್ವಿಘ್ನೇನೈವ ಕರ್ತವ್ಯಂ ದಾಸೋಹಂ ತವ ಕೇಶವಾಂ ಭವೇ ಭವೇ ಯಥಾ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಪಾದಯೋಸ್ತವ ಜಾಯದೆ ತಥಾ ಕುರುಷ್ವ ದೇವೇಶ ನಾಥಸ್ತ್ವಂ ನೋ ಯದ ಪ್ರಭವಂ ನಾಮ ಸಂಕೀರ್ತನಂ ಯಸ್ಯ ಸರ್ವಭಾವ ಪ್ರಣಾಶನಂ ಪ್ರಣಾಮೋ ದುಃಖ ಶಮನಂ ತಂ ನಮಾಮಿ ಹರಿಂ ವರಂ ಜನ್ಮಾದ್ಯಸ್ಯ ಯದೋನ್ವಯಾದಿಗರದ ಚಾತೇಶ್ವರ ತೇನೇ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮ ಹೃದಾಯ ಆದಿಗವೇ ಮುಹ್ಯಂದಿಯತ್ ಸೂರಯಾಂ ತೇಜೋ ವಾರಿಮೃದಂ ಯಥಾ ವಿನಿಮಯೋ ಯತ್ರ ತ್ರಿಸರ್ಗೋ ವಂಶ ಧಾಮ್ನಾ ಸ್ವೇನ ಸದಾ ನಿರಸ್ತ ಗುಹಗಂ ಸತ್ಯಂ ಪರಂ ಧೀಮಹಿ ಧರ್ಮ ಪ್ರೋಜ್ಜಿನ ಗೈದವೋತ್ರ ಪರಮೋ ನಿರ್ಮತ್ಸರಾಣಂ ಸದಾ ವೇದ್ಯಂ ವಾಸ್ತವ ಮಂತ್ರ ವಸ್ತು ಶಿವದಂ ತಾಪತ್ರಯೋನ್ಮೂಲನಂ ಶ್ರೀಮದ್ಭಾಗವತೇ ಮಹಾಮುನಿ ಕೃತೇ ಕಿಂವಾವರೈಶ್ವರ ಸದ್ಯೋ ಹೃದ್ಯ ವಿರುದ್ಯ ನೇತ್ರ ಕೃತಿ ಶುಶ್ರೂಷುಭೀ ತಕ್ಷಣಾಲ್ ನಿಗಮ ಕಲ್ಪದರೋರ್ಗಲಿದಂ ಫಲಂ ಶುಭ ಮುಖಮಾತ ಮೃದಂಗ್ರವ ಸಂಯುತಂ ಪಿಬದ ಭಾಗವತಂ ರಸಮಾಲಯಂ ಮುಹುರಹೋ ರಸಿಗಾ ಭುವಿ ಭಾವುಗಾಃ ಸಚಿದಾನಂದ ರೂಪಾಯ ವಿಶ್ವೋತ್ಪತ್ಯಾದಿ ಹೇತವೇ ತಾಪತ್ರಯ ವಿನಾಶಾಯ ಶ್ರೀಕೃಷ್ಣಾಯ ವಯಂ ನಮಃ ಯಂ ಪ್ರವ್ರಜಂತಂ ಅನುಭೇದಮಭೇದಕೃತ್ಯಂ ದ್ವೈವಾಯನೋ ವಿರಹಮಾದರಮಜ್ಜುಹಾವಾಂ ಪುತ್ರೇದಿ ಗಣ್ಮಣಿದಯತ್ತರವೋಭಿನೇದು ತಂ ಸರ್ವಭೂತಹೃದಯಂ ಮುನಿಮಾನದೋಸ್ಮಿ ಯಸ್ವಾನುಭಾವಮಖಿಲ ಶ್ರುತಿಸಾರಮೇಕಂ ಅಧ್ಯಾತ್ಮದೀಪಮದಿತಿಷದಾಂ ತಮೋಂಗಂ ಸಂಸಾರಿಣಾಂ ಕರುಣಯಾಃ ಪುರಾಣ ಗುಹ್ಯಂ ತಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಸೂನ್ಯಂ ಉಪಯಾಮಿ ಗುರುಮುನೀನಾಂ ನಾರಾಯಣಂ ನಮಸ್ಕೃತ್ಯ ನರಂ ಚೈವ ನರೋತ್ತಮಂ ದೇವಿಂ ಸರಸ್ವತಿಂ ವ್ಯಾಸಂ ತದೋ ಜಯಮುದೀರೇನ್ ಕಮನೀಯ ಕಿಶೋರ ಮುಗ್ಧಮೂರ್ತಿ ಕಳವೇಣು ಕುಣಿಯಾದೃದಾನಿನಿಂದೋ ಮಮ ವಾಚಿ ವಿಜೃಂಭಣಾ ಮುರಾರೇ ಮಧುರೀಂ ನಕ್ಕನಿ ಕಾವಿ 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 ನಮ ಓಂ ವಿಷ್ಣು ಪದಾಯ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಪ್ರಸ್ಥಾಯ ಭೂತಲೇ ಶ್ರೀಮದೇ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವೇದಾಂತ ಸ್ವಾಮಿನ್ ಇತಿ ನಾಮಿನೇ नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रजालिने निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यादेशधारिणी श्रीमल गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्यां नमः वंदे नंदव्रजस्त्रीणां पादरेणुमभीष्णशा यासं हरिगदो गीतं पुनादि भुवनत्रयं गोवी चरणारविन्द परमानवे नमः पीतांबरं करविराजित चक्रशंभं कौमुदगी सरसिजं करुणा समुद्रं राधा सहायमदि सुंदर मंदहासं वातालेश मनीषं हृदि भावयामि कोमलं कुजयन् वेणुं श्यामलोयं कुमारगा वेदवेद्यपरं ब्रह्म भासदां पुरदो मम मूकं करोति वाजालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयदे गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवं श्रीकृष्णाय नमः श्रीमते राधिकायै नमः सर्वत्र गोविन्दनाम सङ्कीर्तनं गोविन्द गोविन्द ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवतां नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणमुनीनां मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्ब त्वामनुसन्धनामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी नमोऽस्तु ते व्यासविशालबुद्धि पुल्लारविन्दायदपत्रनेत्र येन त्वया भारततैलपूर्णप्रज्वालितो ज्ञानमयप्रदीप प्रपन्नवारिजाताय त्वत्र वेत्रैकबाणये ज्ञानमुद्राय कृष्णाय गीतामृतदुहे नमः सर्वोपनिषदो गावो दुग्धा गोपालनन्दन पार्थो वत्स सुधीर्भोक्ता दुग्धं गीतामृतं महः वसुदेवसुतं देवं कंसचानूग्रमर्दनं देवकी परमानन्दं कृष्णं वन्दे जगद्गुरुम् भीष्मद्रोणतटाजयद्रथजना गान्धारनीलोल्बला शल्यग्राहवती कृपेण हनी कर्णेन वेलाकुला अश्वत्थामा विकर्णघोरमुदरा दुर्योधनावर्तिनी सोत्तीर्ण खलु पाण्डवैरणनदी कैवर्तकेशवां पाराशर्यवजसरोजममलं गीतार्थगन्धोत्कटं नानाख्यानगकेसरं हरिकथा सम्बोधनाबोधितं लोकैः सज्जनषल्पदैरहरहप्येदीयमानं मुदा भूयाद्भारतभङ्गजकलिमलप्रध्वंसिनश्रेयसे मूकं करोति वाजालं पङ्गुं लङ्घयदे गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्त्वन्वन्दे दिवैस्तवैर्वेदे साङ्गपदे क्रमोपनिषदेर्गायन्ति यं समगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनो यस्यान्तं भ्रमिदुःसुरासुरगणे देवाय तस्मै नमः For the next 2 weeks, about 16 days including today, we'll discuss two topics, Dakshinamurti Stotram and Prahlada Stuti. What is the relationship between Dakshinamurti's Stotram and Prahlada Stuti is that Dakshinamurti transmitted transcendental knowledge to the rishis through silence, Prahlada spoke to Narasimhamurti in his glorifications the same knowledge in a through words. You will see that relationship when we go through these verses. So, normally, if you want to transmit some knowledge in us to somebody else, it's always done through a language, isn't it? Madhyamam, or the medium, is through a language. Always you can see communication is always through a language. You communicate through some language. If you think a little bit, you can see that even little children, they will ask this question. Sometimes they will ask this question, how do the birds and the animals, they communicate each other? They will always ask that question. More or less, they are all making the similar sound. The birds and the animals, they make a similar sound, isn't it? And do they have a specific language to communicate? This question everybody like to understand, isn't it? The reason is, the thing called a language, everybody, any language in this world, is the most gross thing. It's the most gross thing. You can understand why it is so. We think language is the finer. Language is not the most finer thing. Language is the most gross thing of communication. Most gross form of communication is the language. We are giving a form to it through words. We are giving a form to it through the words. Sometimes we can see through expressions alone, you can, through your facial expressions or physical expressions, you can transmit your emotions to another person in a much better way than through the language. And sometimes you look at somebody's face and you will know what he means or what she means by that, isn't it? So, even though they have spoken something with the words, from their face you will get an idea what they are trying to say. In the same way, you have to understand how the language has developed. You know that in the Bhagavadam there is mention, Krishna talks to Uddhava this thing, para pashyanti madhyama vaighari, four stages of language. What does that mean? Para pashyanti madhyama vaighari, he mentions there. That what you have to know is, prior to we speak something, a few things happens before that. For example, there is a steady state inside all of us, a very steady state. Steady means there is no thought waves, nothing, completely in a peaceful state inside exists. That state is called para. That state is called para. In that state, para state, if a movement happens, movement, chalanam they call it, movement means that some changes happen in that steady state, that is when a thought develops inside us. In all the time this is happening in all of us, that in a very quiet situation inside, suddenly a thought builds up inside, and that is called pashyanti. That is called pashyanti. And that thought, what has developed inside, then the next thing what you do to that is, you give a formation in the form of words. That is what is called madhyama. That the thought that has developed inside, or expression you have, or whatever you want developed inside in the form of thought form, you give a form to that in the form of words, and that is called madhyama. And finally, when you put it through the lips to the other person, in the form of sound, it is called vaighari. So, para, pashyanti, madhyama, vaighari. So, this is how those four stages operate. And out of these four, the purest state is in the para state. But from para to vaighari, it gets continuously affected or becomes impure. And by the time in the form of vaighari it comes out, it has already lost a lot of it, its purity. So, that is the reason why they say that the verbal expressions or through vaikari, whatever we are speaking, does not have the same effect of the parastage. In parastage is the perfection. And from perfection it becomes more and more imperfect by the time it comes to vaikari. It's not in vaikari everything is perfect. Vaikari is not perfect. Therefore, they say that that when you express in the form of words to the world outside, to whom you want to communicate, that it is that vaikari sound, that is what we call it as language. That vaikari sound, you are converting that in the form of language. So you can see how the original stage from the silence, it has developed into pashyanti or the form of thoughts, and the thoughts had developed in the form of words, and the words finally turned into the form of sound. Para, pashyanti, madhyama, vaikari, in these four stages. So that vaikari sound, what we have given an expression in the form of words, is that what you find in animals and the birds, in the sound they make it. The sound they make it. But where did the sound start originally? It started from that silence. Silence was the root. That is from everything has started. All the time this is what's happening in us. Because we don't think that far into deeper level. We only start from the sound, everything. So that is why that you can say that sound is actually nothing but the, if you take the silence as the origin, it is his grandson's grandson is the sound. Is it not? Sound, the silence is the truth. It is in silence everything is happening inside. In that silence, his grandson is Madhyama. Pashyanti, Madhyama, and then grandson is Vaikari sound that comes out from there. So, from that silence, by the time it gets to the, in the form of words, a lot of its potency has gone, already gone. A lot of the potency has already gone. So, when you want to talk about things outside in this world, the things that is in the world outside, language is okay. Language you can utilize for that purpose. But your realization inside, which is internal, related to the soul and experience of the soul and realizations, particularly in relationship with self-realization, more powerful than this language is the silence to express that. The silence is more powerful in expressing your internal realizations or self-realization through silence is more powerful than it can express it through the words in the outside. See the difference there. That the words what we use to express the things in this world, they are not capable of expressing the knowledge of the self or self-realization. This is the difficulty. That we are so used to this concept that the knowledge in the world, knowledge in the expression in the world as important, and we have accepted that as the medium of expression. It is not so. For things outside in the world, to talk about matters in the world, it is okay. But when it comes to self-realization and knowledge of the soul and or the realization inside, if you want to transmit, words cannot do that. Silence is more effective in that aspect. It's more effective in that aspect. So, what you can express through the silence cannot be expressed through the words. This is the principle behind it. This whole Dakshinamurti discussions in the Bhagavatam also, you will find this. Dakshinamurti is silent. In fact, Uddhava asked this question to Krishna. I don't know whether you have noticed this. A number of things Uddhava asked in one point in the 19th chapter, in the 11th canto. Krishna says, Uddhava says to Krishna, what is Dakshina means? That was Uddhava's question. What does Dakshina means? And it was an interesting question. Krishna is saying to Uddhava, Uddhava, Dakshina means Jnana Sandeshaha. Jnana Sandesha means transmitting the knowledge of the self to somebody else is called Dakshina. If you look into the verse, it is the 19th chapter. In the 19th chapter, you will see there that the Uddhava asking this question. Uddhava vacha, 29th verse. Kim danam kim tapashauryam kim satyam kadamuchyade kastyaga kim dhanam cheshtam ko yajna kaja dakshina. What is dakshina means? That is Uddhava's question. See there, 29th verse. 11, 19, 29. Kim dhanam, what is charity? Kim tapas, what is austerity? Kshavidyam, kim satyam, mrudam, uchere, kastyagaha, kim dhanam, cheshtam, ko yajnam, kacha, dakshina. What is dakshina means? What is Krishna's answer? You will see there, Krishna's answer later on, that 39th verse, Krishna is answering that. Dharma ishtam dhanam ranam, yajnoham bhagavattama, Dakshina jnana sandeshaha pranayama param balam. Dakshina means jnana sandesham. That is the answer. Krishna's answer is Dakshina means jnana sandesham. Jnana sandesham. So that is the same thing here. That if Dakshina, Krishna is saying, is nothing but jnana sandesham. If you transmit the realization or knowledge of the self to somebody, jnana sandesham, jnanam is knowledge of the self, sandesham, that is transmission of that, is dakshina. That is how Krishna defines the word dakshina in the Bhagavatam. So, you can see, if it is silence is everything, then the question will come, that if silence is everything, that all the realized soul should have been keeping quiet, is it not? That would have been, you would have thought so, that they would have been very quiet. That if only through silence it can be transmitted, if only through silence it can be transmitted, then all the realized personalities, jnanis or realized souls, they should have been very quiet, not saying anything. But it is not so. Why? Many of them, throughout their life, They continuously spoke. But what is the difference? Difference is, when they were speaking, that silence, what they had inside, and the essence of that silence, or the message of that silence, without losing that, it came through their words. That was their success. That when they spoke, from the realizations is continuously flowing through their words. And that, therefore, their words become very useful for everybody else. Their words are not just coming from the lips. It is carrying that juice or the nectar of their silence inside when it flows from their lips. For example, ordinary people like us, in our speech, whatever we talk to each other, our words just comes from the mouth, is it not? And there are many instances we'll just speak without even, do not even think about it. As soon as you see somebody known to you, for example, 80% of our conversation is like that. Once we say, oh, how are you? We didn't even think about it. From the lips straight away it comes out. Is it not? Or we'll inquire about their welfare. Oh, is the family, everybody okay? How's the job going? Or few things like that. And you can see, you had no motive behind it asking that question. and you are not serious about it, neither you are sincere about it. You are just asking because that's the system in the world, we follow the same system. So simply words that comes from the mouth, nothing more to it than that. And by the time they reply, you may not have even had the time to listen to the reply. You switch on to something else by then, isn't it? So very few, this is most of the conversation in this world. Rarely some things may come from the mind, rarely, but doesn't go further than that. So most of our conversation is with the mind and the words. Mind and the words, nothing more to it than that. This is not the truth with the self-realized personalities. They have, and some others, instead of the mind, it may come from their intelligence, a little bit more on a higher level. Either from a mental platform or from an intellectual platform, in rare cases, otherwise mostly from the verbal level. So, what we have to understand here is that behind all these things, sensual, which is the lips, mental and the intellectual, beyond all these things, there is a system there where the jnanis, what they say is that they are drilling a borewell inside, and it is that borewell that brings out that realization from inside. Realization from inside. And this is what is called Bhagiratha's effort. In the Bhagavatam, you see, they're bringing a Ganga from there. Bhagiratha went and performed penances. Finally, Lord Shiva accepted that on his matted hair. And then Janu Maharshi, that story is in the 9th canto. This effort of drilling inside and bringing out that nectar from inside, every one of us have the nectar. Only thing, we just didn't know how to drill and how to get it out from there, the knowledge of the self. So how Bhagiratha brought Ganga river from the spiritual sky to here, similarly, in the spiritual sky inside, that realization of the self, bringing it out within, from within oneself, is, that is called Bhagiratha's effort. So, what purpose for that for? So, when that happens, then you realize what liberation means. That liberation means. In Srimad Bhagavatam, when it is spoken through these different stories, it has a relationship with the process of self-realization. Otherwise, it will remain as a story. It will remain as a story. The story is this, that Bhagiratha went and performed many years of penances in order to please Ganga river to come here. And that is the same process in the Vedantam. What they talk about is going inwards and drilling down and finding out the truth or the self from within, which is already flowing inside in the Chidakasham. Chidakasham means the spiritual sky inside all of us. And from there, making that Ganga river to flow through us and come out in that way. So, from Nishchalata, Nishchalata means that silence inside, that the words build up from there. The words take the shape. Upanishad says, Chatvari va paramidani bhani vidurye brahmanaye manishinam. That means the words have got four sections in there, 4 feet, and out of that 4 feet, that means parapashandi madhyama vaikari, out of those four, fourth step or the fourth feet, it is called that the words, what we use through the in the language. It is the fourth part of that. Out of the four part. Chatvari vak paramidasha bhadi tani vidurye brahmana ye manishinam. That this chatvari, chatvari means the four aspects of it, the four parts of that. It is only the fourth part that we utilized. The other three parts is inside us. The other three parts are inside us. So, whatever we may say through, in the modern world, that is what's given importance, isn't it? How you speak, what you speak, and things like that. And as far as the truth is concerned, knowledge of the self is concerned, no matter how much you have spoken, how much you have studied, and whatever you have spoken and studied, all of them is only falling within these two planes. Which one? Intellectual plane or the mental plane? Finish there. Nothing more than that. It is because of that that in the Shastram they say that all other subjects, whether it is science or psychology, all of them are always in a limited plane. Science, material science, and material subjects like medicine or the engineering or psychology or any such thing, all topics, they are within these two planes. Which one? Intellectual plane and mental plane. And they have to remain within these two. And and all this physical science, psychology, all of them will remain in these two planes. They cannot go out of it. They are within these two planes. And because of that, they are very limited. They are very limited. In Shastram, they use the word parichinam. Parichinam means they are only allowed to stay within those two fields. Intellectual plane and mental plane. They cannot come out from that. Come out from that. And they cannot go deeper than that. Within that two field, they can move around. That's all. Intellectual plane and the spirit, and this mental plane. And because of that, it will never be perfect. Complete perfection is not possible. Because you have seen that when we have expressions happening through us, right? We have the origin, the silence inside, from where everything starts. When a movement happens in the silence, that is when thoughts develop. And when the thoughts mature, mature means when the thoughts takes another grosser form, it becomes words. And the words, when it becomes further gross form, it becomes language. So beginning from silence, to thoughts, to words, and to language, finally. These science and all other subjects in this world, they are stuck in these two. That is the field of intelligence and mind, and therefore they cannot go deeper further into the silence aspect of it. It will never go further deeper than that. It remains in these two, and it will remain like that forever. And that is the reason why we find when they are conducting so many experiments, research, this, that, and the other, perfection is not there at any stage. It's always imperfect. That is why continuously revisions, one after the other. Everything they do, again you have to revise it after a year. Like, you know, the windows, 8, 9, 10, you keep on doing it with everything what you are manufacturing, or what you are, like the cars, every year new model. Perfection is not possible. Why? It is coming from these two planes, mind and intelligence. As long as it is in these two planes, perfection is never possible. This is the reason behind that. So, and it is so limited that once you come to the spiritual life, in the field of spiritual life, our physical, mental knowledge is all very limited. Mental knowledge is all very limited. No matter how much you have studied, how much you have heard, all of them is only a small percentage of the reality inside. Of the reality inside. The 99% of spiritual life is in the field of anubhuti, in realization. 99% of spiritual life is in realization. It is only 1% what you are getting it from the books, from hearing, from words and other things. That is why it's so important to go deeper into it. Because we are hovering around on the surface with everything. So, if you have experienced that, what the jnanis will say this, that silence, nishchalata, they call it. You will see in that verse, nishchalata tve jivan mukti. Isn't it? That nishchalata. Nishchalata means that silence inside. That if those who have experienced that inside, even if they have spoken through the words, they will not lose that nishchalata inside or silence inside. So, and that person, if he has experienced that inside, or if he has spoken inside, or if he kept quiet, either way, it will have its power in that person. This you will have to hear from those who have experienced that. Nishchalata inside, silence inside. Paul Brendan mentions this in his book. If you look into Paul Brendan's book, when he went to see Maharshi, he says this, that his silence is more eloquent than his words. That was the words, that's what he said. He wanted to go and see him, and he caught a train to Thirunamalai and went there, and all along the journey he was writing all the questions he wants to ask. When he got there, he couldn't ask any question. Why? When he saw Maharshi, and the silence from the Maharshi was sufficient, all his doubts have gone. There's no more doubts inside. And he himself was in a shock when he got there. So therefore, when he wrote his book later, he says, his silence is more eloquent than his words. He didn't have to speak anything. That is the power of silence. That's the power of silence. So that is why it's so important to understand this. Because we have in this world, by living here, is sufficient to become extroverts. And mostly we are in the world outside. We live in the world outside. And to understand that there is a world inside, and that is where the treasure is. Knowledge of the self, the silence, the chidagasham, as in the Bhagavatam it calls the chidagasham, is inside. And that sky is unknown to us. So therefore, because it's not known to us, we are always looking at outside and making judgments on that basis. So here you can see that it is so forceful that the expressions of the jnanis, that and their words, he says there, Paul Brendan says there, that his silence and his words were very few, but it had such a taste for that, he says. And it was so much logical, he felt that he said that his silence was more powerful than when he spoke. It was forceful and it gets in without any effort. We speak hundreds of times, it's not getting in. And they, through their silence, they get the message in. This is the difference. We speak for hours and hours, message is not getting in. And they, through their silence, they get the message in. This is that difference. So this silence inside, what is inside, everybody has that. That silence in its personified form is called Dakshinamurti. That silence in its personified form is Dakshinamurti. Dakshinamurti normally, Dakshinamurti means, the word means, the personality who is turning towards the south and sitting there. But, and there are deities in the form of Lord Shiva's form as Dakshinamurti installed in the temples. As Dakshinamurti you will find there. But, if you talk about that, that is in a gross form you are expressing the message what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavatam. When Uddhava asked the question, Kacha Dakshina, Krishna says, Dakshina Jnana Sandesham, he says. So that message in the Bhagavatam is that knowledge personified, it is being transmitted through silence, and that is called actually Dakshina. But here, when it takes a personified form, and there is a history behind it in the Puranas, the story also, it is in that gross level that the Dakshinamurti, because south side is considered to be Yama's abode. If you know, Samyamini Puri it's called. So it's always not a very nice place to look at, towards the south. South means, in relationship with the earthly planet, in the planetary systems, the south side is the Samyamini Puri, where we look towards that. That's not considered to be, that it is the side of death, isn't it? Side of death. So, here, but there's another side to it also. Death is such a thing, unless you face death, you will never transcend it. Unless you face death, you will transcend it. So, unless you experience fate, death, you cannot transcend death. For example, spiritual master, why is he given so much honor and respect? Because spiritual master knows what death means. What death means. For example, Parikshit Maharaj in the Srimad Bhagavatam, only when death came to him, he realized that I need somebody to guide me now, what I should do. Is it not? That's how in the Bhagavatam it is. See the power of death? Death forced Parikshit to look for someone to give him the proper guidance at that point. We are all in the same situation. At the time of death only you realize it. What should I do? This question will only come at the time of death. What should I do now? So, that means one who is facing death, Dakshina. Dakshina means the south towards Samyamini Puri. This is all different ways of understanding this message. That this Dakshinamurti spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam also, we'll come to that later, that Dakshinamurti's position is spoken there in the fourth canto. Who is Dakshinamurti and the features of Dakshinamurti there. So, death is another aspect of that. That when one faces death, then he is asking, what should I do now? Because he realizes that everything he has done in his life is a waste of time. At the time of death, what will you do? You have worked very hard in this world, reached glorious positions here, lot of recognition in this world, name, fame, this, that, everything you have, lot of wealth. At the time of death, you will also ask the same question, what should I do now? Because then you realize it, that all that what you have done in this life was a waste. It's not there to help you at that point in time. Is it not? So that is why this particular message, the Dakshinamurti's message is that in the Sureshwara Acharya, he mentions this, that Atma Spurti, that's the word he has used, that means Chit Shakti. Chit Shakti. That means in Ekadasha Skandam, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, you will see Uddhava asked a question, what is Dakshina means? And Krishna told Uddhava, it is called Jnana Sandesham. Jnana Sandesha. Dakshina Jnanam. So, Jnanam or knowledge of the self, when it gets dissipated or transmitted, that is called Dakshina. Just similarly, something like from a flower, its smells comes out, isn't it? The flavor or the smell of the flower keeps flowing around. Similarly, this Jnanam, Jnana, Krishna used the word Jnana Sandesham. Dakshina Jnana Sandesham, he says. This Jnana means not the knowledge what we normally talk about. That is intellectual stuffing. But the general knowledge what we have is the intellectual knowledge, isn't it? It is not in that sense it's spoken. Jnana means that it is a indication. Jnapakam. Jnapakam means it's a pointing it out to something. It is pointing out to something inside every one of us, inside everyone. For example, when you talk about knowledge outside in this world, it is very solid thing. It's a very solid thing. And inside us, what we have this thing called knowledge, you will see in the Bhagavatam everywhere this referenced to the self as knowledge. You start wondering why self is called knowledge, because for us, self means it must be some object inside, isn't it? But in the Bhagavatam, how did they present? Vatandita tattvavidam tattvam yat jnanam. Advayat jnanam is the self. Advayat jnanam is the self. And that jnanam, when it starts flowing out from inside, then we call it as the jnana prasaram or the jnana sandesham. What in the Bhagavatam? In the first canto, in the second chapter, where Divine and the Divinity, that's I think titled, Bhakti Yogam, where it says, Vadandida tattvavidam tattvam yel jnanam advayam. Advaya jnanam, in other words. That advaya jnanam when it starts flowing out, it is called Jnana Prasaram. Or Prasaram means it is coming out from inside. It's coming from inside. And that Jnanam, in its Swarupam, in its form, is Murti, is Dakshinamurti. So, all spiritual masters are for that reason, all spiritual masters are considered to be Dakshinamurti. Dakshinamurti's representatives they are. Dakshina means knowledge, and or that personality inside who is continuously releasing the knowledge of the self to others. So, and that need not be through the words. That need not be through the words. Just like from a flower, the smell of the flower keeps on coming without anybody's effort. Similarly, that person who has realized the self within, it will keep coming from their realizations all the time, from their heart, and that is that Jnana Prasaram, or the flow of knowledge from within. So, the symptom of that, a Mahalpa has spoken, that a person who is realized the self, who has realized the self, in his presence, our mind and the senses, normally that's what operates, isn't it? Mind and the senses. Generally, our mind and senses is always active. For example, if you sit in front of a television, what happens at that time? The mind and the senses start working. So mind and senses start working. Similarly, if you see somebody, mind and the senses start working. But when you are in the presence of a realized person, what will happen is mind and senses will not work. First thing, something else outside this mind and senses start working within everybody. Everybody. This is depending on that personality whose presence you are in. Your mind and senses, normally in our life, mind and senses are always operating while working, while watching television or while speaking. All the time mind and senses are working. The knowledge of the self has no effect there. But in the presence of self-realized personalities, mind and senses quietens down. And the knowledge of the self start working from within. That experience only when you are in the assembly of the, or in the association of the great personalities. So, that means it is another plane of recognition. Another plane of recognition. That means that is where this knowledge of the self sprouts. Anubhuti Mandalam it is called. Anubhuti is coming from that. It's not coming from the mind. It's not coming from the intelligence. It's not coming from the intelligence. And that center from where it is originating, and that place is called that center where it's originating, Jnana Prasaram. Prasaram means that what is continuously emitting knowledge from inside. And the center from where it emits or it's flowing out, that is called Dakshinamurti. That is called Dakshinamurti. Dakshinamurti is that center inside all of us where in the self-realization process, that realization what is developing inside, it slowly starts flowing out. And that center where it's coming from, it is called Dakshinamurti. Dakshinamurti. And so in Puranams, it is spoken as the Dakshinamurti as an incarnation of Shiva, as incarnation of Shiva. That means when Sati broke up, after Sati, Sati Devi, that means Sri Parvati Devi in her previous life, when she gave up her body, you know that story in the Bhagavatam, that in the Dashayagam, where Sati gave up her body, Lord Shiva turned towards the south side as Dakshinamurti. If you look into the fourth canto, you will see there in the sixth chapter, that Dakshinamurti's position is saying, Kutvarau Dakshine Savyam, 38th verse. 4, 6, 38. Kutvarau Dakshine Savyam Padabatman Chajanuni Bahum Prakoshta Chamala Asinam Tarkamudraya Tam Brahma Nurvana Samadhimashridam Vyupashudam Girisham Yoga Kaksham Salogabala Munayo Manunam Adhyamanam Pranjalaya Pranemu. If you want to see, understand that scene properly, if you have to go back a few more verses before, from 34, verse 34 it begins. In front of Dashamurti, four Kumaras are sitting there. Sananda Maharshi, Sananda Sanadana Sanat Kumara, Sanaga Sanadana Sanadana Sanat Kumara Maharshi are sitting there. Sanandana Der Mahasiddhai, Shandai Samshanda Vigraham, Ubasyamanam Sakhyacha, Bartra Gukhyagarakshasam, Vidyatapo Yogapatham, Astidam Tamadhishwaram, Charandam Vishwasuhrdam, Valsalya Logamangalam, Lingam Jatabasabhishtam, Bhasmam Dandajadajinam, Angena Sadhya Bharujam, Chandralekhyam Chabibradam, Upavishtam Darbhamayam, Prasyam Brahma Sanatanam, Naradaya Prabhochandam Prashrade Shrunvadam Sadam. This is that scene in the Kailas, Dakshinamurti sitting there. In front of them, who are all sitting there? Sanaga, Sananda, Sanadana, Sanat Kumara. The four rishis. And who else is present there? All other great rishis, sages, they are present there. And Sri Narada Maharshi is there. They are all receiving transcendental knowledge from Dakshinamurti in silence. In silence, it is being transmitted. Krutvaro, look at his situation. Krutvaro Dakshine Savyam Padabadmam Cha Januni Bahum Prakoshte Achamala Asinam Tarkamudraya. This is that yoga state in which Dakshinamurti is delivering the message to the rishis. Rishis are receiving the message from him. Tam Brahma Nirvana Samadhi Ashridam Vipashridam Girisham Yoga Kaksham Salogabala Munayo Manunam Adhyam Manum Pranjalaya Pranemo. Then Satubalabhyagada Malpa Yonim Surasureshe Abhivandida Angri Uttaya Chakre Shirasa Abhivandanam Rakatamakasi Yatayo Vishnu Tathabare Siddhagana Maharshibhir Yevai Samanda Dananila Lohidam Namaskrita Praha Shashanga Shekharam Krita Pranamam Prakasanni Valmabhu. So this is that situation here, that these four Kumaras, Narada Maharshi is asking this question, that is, Sri Narada Maharshi wants to understand, have the transcendental knowledge from Lord Shiva. So the way it is presented in the Bhagavatam is, Sati Devi left her body and the Dakshinamurti is sitting there and these rishis have come to see him, including Sri Narada Maharshi. And Narada Maharshi is asking questions and Lord Shiva is giving the transcendental knowledge, and but the name Dakshinamurti itself is not mentioned there, because normally that story is that the four Kumaras were born from the mind, Manasaputra they are called, from Brahma's mind they were born. And the reason behind that is more interesting. That the Kumaras wanted to have transcendental knowledge, knowledge of the self, Atma. Remember, in the Bhagavad Megalasya Skandam, in the 13th chapter, Hamsagita, is discussion between Krishna and the four Kumaras about transcendental knowledge. They had questions and they have asked, and Krishna came in the form of a Hamsam, swan, and answered the questions. It's a famous chapter in the Egadisha Skandam. Hamsagita. So similarly, the same four Kumaras had come here and asking on their behalf. Sri Narada Maharshi was there. Narada Maharshi is asking questions. And Lord Shiva is answering that. But the history behind that is, when Kumaras were born from Brahma's heart, they wanted to know Brahmavidya. Brahmavidya means the knowledge of the self. From Brahma himself they wanted to know. But they were not pleased with Brahma. Reason is that they had a preconcept. What is that? That if you have a preconcept in your mind while listening, the person who is speaking, if you have already a preconcept within your mind, that then whatever the person says, you won't listen. You won't hear it. Because already our preconcept will block it. And that's what has happened to the Kumaras. When Kumara, when they were asking questions to Brahma, in their inside they were thinking, what is this our father, Brahma? Why is he like this? Because as far as they are concerned, if somebody is giving Brahma Vidya, he should be either a brahmachari or a sannyasi. Why should I accept from Brahma? He's a householder. Does he have the knowledge? This doubt inside before Kumaras. So therefore they couldn't listen to him. We say Brahma is our head in our tradition and all that. That's all fine. But in the Puranams you will see this. That Kumaras, when they went to see Lord Brahma, when they wanted to know the knowledge of the self, they said, Brahma, you are not qualified, they told him. Why? It's all right, you are the first person who have been created, but you are a householder. We can't take instructions from you. They told this to Brahma. This is because it's of the preconcept inside in them. Then, suppose if you had any preconcepts like that inside, whatever you may listen to anybody, it will not get in, because this will be a big block inside. Because already we have made up our mind inside, well, this person, he doesn't know. We'll see, listen to him, but should we take what he says in that mood? So unless you have a person who is acceptable from inside, then if you listen, whatever we speak, it will not go inside. It will get blocked there. So, our Kumara's case, the preconditions were, or preconcept was, that he should be a brahmachari or a sannyasi, if he has that realizations. And he should have given up. Therefore, they didn't like Brahma talking about Brahma Vidya. They rejected Brahma to talk about Brahma Vidya. They decided we'll go to Vaikuntha planet and see Mahavishnu there. When they went to see Mahavishnu, they didn't like it there either. Because Mahavishnu is in such a state, Mahalakshmi is sitting with Mahavishnu. Kumara says, what spiritual knowledge can he deliver? He's living, to that extent they were finer in their thoughts also. They were saying, what Mahavishnu says, he is living householder life, what do I take from him the instruction? They left straight away. They didn't stay in there. Then they went to Kailasam to see Lord Shiva there, and when they got there, they didn't like Shiva also. Shri Parvati is sitting on the lap. So they rejected Brahma, they rejected Vishnu, and now they have rejected Shiva also. So this is the situation. So they were returning from Kailasam. They say none of them has any qualifications to talk about Brahma Vidya, the knowledge of the self. So at that time, Sri Parvati has spoken to Lord Shiva like this, that sometimes it is true that the disciple has to understand the spiritual master, but in all cases, if you insist that the disciple has to fully understand the spiritual master, and if the spiritual master expects the disciple to be perfect, Things won't happen. Therefore, sometimes, in whichever way a disciple becomes satisfied, accordingly you have to take a form. Sri Parvati says this to Shiva. Because if you insist that, if every time the spiritual master expects a disciple to understand the spiritual master's position and to accept the knowledge from him, it may not happen. Sometimes disciples won't have that discipline inside. Therefore, in that situation, the spiritual master has to take a form and present himself in front of the disciple
whichever way that will please the disciple. Similarly, he says here, and that is what is called the grace of the spiritual master, Krupa. Who is spiritual master? Is Krishna himself. There's nobody else. So the grace of the spiritual master is that he has to accept that form in whichever way he can transmit the message to the disciple. So whatever concept or preconcept they have in their mind about this thing, accordingly you have to take the form and go and sit in front of them. The spiritual master has to go and sit in front of them in whichever way they like to see the spiritual master. So, it is at that time that Lord Shiva has decided to change the form. And when the four Kumaras were walking back from Kailasam, on their way, underneath a huge banyan tree, Lord Shiva goes and sits there like a brahmachari dress. 16-year-old and in fully in a transcendental state, with matted hair and wearing the deer skin, the snake on the throat, in the neck, and in the yoga state, with the yogadandam on the left hand, and tarkamudra, the chinmudra, what they call in the Bhagavadam, showing that form, in a transcendental state, Lord Shiva is sitting there. And when they saw that, they go and paid obeisances to him. They didn't know that as Lord Shiva has come in another form. They go and pay obeisances to him. Chitram vadadaror mule vriddha shishya guror yuvo gurostu maunam vyakhyanam shishyastu chinna samshaya. You will see in the Shrinam, that song will come later. There what happened? Chitram vadadaror mule, that picture you will see, that he is sitting underneath the tree, Lord Shiva sitting and instructing transcendental knowledge. Vriddha shishya guror yuvo, the disciples are much older, four Kumaras. Spiritual master is lot younger. Vriddha shishya guror yuvo. The spiritual master is young and the disciples are old. And then gurostu maunam vyakhyanam, guru is not saying anything. The four Kumaras are sitting there and looking at Lord Shiva's face. Gurostu maunam vyakhyanam, through silence all doubts are getting cleared, and shishyastu chinna samshaya, afterwards the disciples had no doubts. All doubts have gone away from them. So, in the same incident, Ramana Maharshi talks about that. He says there that these disciples, they got there and asked questions 1 or 2 years. The situation was, they will ask the questions and the Dakshinamurti will answer the question and they will get satisfied and they will go. Who? The Kumaras will go. But after they have left, again doubts will come. This is like us. You understand from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavadam, Krishna has given some very, very, very heavy transcendental knowledge there in the Ekadasha Skandam as well as in the Bhagavad Gita. We will hear all that and then we go. And we get doubt afterwards. And then you will come back again to clarify those doubts. When these doubts are clarified, you'll go again. And then other doubts will come. So these doubts coming and going, that is, why is it spoken specifically in the Puranams as well as the Upanishad says, that verbal answer is very limited. You can only do very limited things verbally. If you have a doubt, and if I give you verbally an answer, probably only a small part of your doubts will get clarified from that. 100% is not possible. Because when you have a doubt inside, centered around that doubt, there are many other doubts about it. Is it not? So once one doubt is clarified, doesn't mean that your doubts have all gone. That is why in Srimad Bhagavatam, when we study Bhagavatam, particularly Ekadasha Skandam, how the words are chosen, Krishna has chosen the words so precisely, and some of these words, when you look at it, you can see there that even Sugabrahmarshi, when he has spoken, he has been very silent about expanding it further. The reason being that, for example, just look at 11th chapter in the 11th canto, or 10th chapter. Krishna is saying in the second verse, Anyicheda Vishuddhalma Dehinam Mishayalmanam Guneshu Tatvadhyanena Sarvarambha Vivaryayam. Verse 2, second verse. Anyicheda Vishuddhalma Dehinam Mishayalmanam Guneshu Tatvadhyanena Sarvarambha Vivaryayam. One verse. Krishna has spoken a lot in that, in through that one verse. He says, Anyicheda Vishuddhalma. Vishuddhalma means, what is Vishuddhi? That is, you have to look into Bhagavatam again, what Vishuddhi means. If you look into the second canto, Bhagavatam, I'm just trying to say one or two things about the way the words have been chosen in the Bhagavatam. See, in the second canto, if you look into the 10th chapter, the second verse, there also second verse. Deshamasya Vishuddhyartham Navanam Iha Lakshanam Varnayandi Mahalmanam Shude Arthena Chanjasa. So, it is the same word here also, Sugar Brahma Sri is using, Anyucheda Vishuddhalma Dehinam Vishayalpanam Guneshu Tattvadhyanena Sarvarambha Vibhajayam. Bhagavatam is saying, Dashamasya Vishuddhyartham Navanam Iha Lakshanam Varnayandi Mahalmanam Shude Athena Chanjasa. What those verses are talking about, what each canto is talking about. Like Sargam, Visargam, Sthanam, Poshanam, Udi, Manyundaram, Ishanagatha, Nirodham, Mukti, Ashrayam. The 10 principles in the 10 cantos that is discussed in the Bhagavatam. Here you see what he says, Dashamasya Vishuddhyartham Nanamiha Lakshanam Varnayandi Mahalmanam Shudenarthena Janjasam. Then, if you go further in the 6th verse, Nirodhasyanu Shainam Almanastaha Shakti Bhi Muktarhitu Anyadha Rupam Surubena Vivastidi Abhasascha Nirodhascha Edascha Dhyavasiyade Sa Ashraya Param Brahma Paramalmedi Shabdyade. Referring to the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, it says here that Abhasascha Nirodhascha Edascha Dhyavasiyade Sa Ashraya Param Brahma Paramalmedi Shabdyade. So, shelter, where should one take shelter? That is the discussion in the 12th canto. Where should one? Abhasascha nirodascha yadascha dhyavasiyade sa ashraya param brahmam paramalmedi shabdyade. So, in order to take that shelter in the 12th canto, one has to become vishuddhi, purification of one's existence. We have to be purified to such an extent that in the 12th canto, this is after after the liberation it's talked about. That is saying here, in the Muktahit Anyadharubam Surubhyana Vyavasthiti. That means, when we are situated in our platform of the self, who we are, we know who we are, at that stage, the shelter comes. Automatically the shelter comes. That's what it's saying here. The Muktahit Anyadharubam Surubhyana Vyavasthiti. That's the state first. Muktahit Anyadharubam Surubhyana Vyavasthiti means that we have lost your bodily identity. Muktahit Anyadharubam is the bodily identity. Anyadharubam has gone, and then what happened? Surubhena Vyavasthiti. You are situated in your platform of the self, who you are. You know who you are then. And in that state, Abhasascha Nirodascha Yadascha Dhyavasiyade Sa Ashrayam. It is then that Ashrayam comes. Ashrayam comes. So, prior to that Ashrayam, here, Dashamasya Vishuddhyartham, the 10 steps in the Bhagavatam, Sargasbhu Sargasthana Poshanam Manyundaram Nishanikata Navanam Ihalakshanam, the 9 things are spoken before. So, it is that Vishuddhi, purification that has happened for a person, that makes a person, Krishna is saying in this 11th, in this 10th chapter. Dashama Vishuddhalma. So you can see that Vishuddhi means Visheshena Shuddhi. Visheshena Shuddhi means that totally pure consciousness, completely free from vasanas, completely free from karma, completely free from all kinds of prarabdham. Everything gone in that state. Dashamasya Vishuddhyartham. That is why Anyuchyada Vishuddhalpma. Now, when you read that verse, you start thinking Vishuddhalpma. Vishuddhalpma means you have to be pure. What pure? What does that mean? Dehinam Vishayalpmanam. Krishna is saying that you have to be so pure to understand this. What is that? Dehinam Vishayalpmanam. Dehinam Vishayalpmanam means people who are absorbed in living in this world, trying to survive here somehow, maintain the body, and addicted to some kind of enjoyment in this world. Dehinam Vishayalpanam. Guneshu Tattva Dhyanena Sarva Arambha Vibharyayam. Krishna is saying that if you observe people in this world who are working very hard, acquiring wealth, acquiring name and fame and this and that, everything, so many other things, ultimately their life is a disaster. They're all ending up in the same frustration in life. Everybody. Nobody is exempted from that. No matter who it is. You can see, even if you have got the highest position in this world, when their position is gone and finally old age comes, death comes, all that they have done in their life, it's all history then. It's all in the memory. Nobody cares anything anymore about it. Isn't it? So, what is Krishna saying here? A Vishuddhalpa, a person who is very pure and free from all these impurities inside, he will notice first thing in this world is Guneshu Tattva Dhyayena Sarva Arambha Vibharyayam. What he will do is, he will understand the tattvam behind it properly, that everything is going to bring misery at the end, everything is going to be a disaster at the end, and therefore Sarva Arambha Vibharyayam, he will free himself from karma. He will pull himself out of karma. Karma has a limit. Karma, to come to that state through knowledge is very difficult. Pulling out of karma in the normal way is different, because we still have the vasanas inside, we still have the we still have the desires inside, but that is not what Krishna is talking about here. He is saying here, Anvikshetha Vishuddhalpa Dehinam Vishayalpanam Guneshu Tattva Dhyanena Sarva Arambha Vibharyayam. That to come out of work and to free oneself from the that desire to engage in karma and to free oneself and to stay out of it with knowledge is difficult. With knowledge is difficult. So here what we are talking about is that in the every verse you can see in that chapter itself the mayadideshavahida sodharmeshu madashraya varnashrama gulacharyam agamalma samacharil anvikshena vishuddhalma dehinam shayalpanam guneshu tattva dhyanena sarvarambha vibharyayam. And explanation of this one principle, the whole that chapter Krishna has used in different ways is waking us up to this reality. Suptasya vishayaloko dhyayato va manorathai naatmagatva vibhala tadha bhedalma dirgunai. Krishna is saying suptasya vishayalokam. In you go into a dream state and you dream so many things. When you wake up, you haven't got a clue what was going on. Isn't it? That dream state. You understand that it has no meaning to you then. Suptasya vishayalokam. So you were in a world of dream at that time, and what was happening then was unknown to you. Somewhere you were doing something without any idea what was going on. Sometimes a very, very rich person, he has got everything at home, all the wealth, and anything he wanted, he could have it. But in the dream state, he could be a street beggar, struggling for food. He can't even get his food. He's starving there. And if you observe carefully, you notice this, that how well in Shastram they have analyzed these things. That when we go into dream state, for example, in vacant state, in everything what you do, your mind and senses are involved. Is it not? So when the mind and senses are involved, actually you are not aware who you are, who is actually involved in the activity, where the self, Atma, and the Jiva are combinedly involved. Is it not? In the vacant state, Jiva is going through all experiences. And Atma is supplying everything from behind. All the power you need, energy you need, and the knowledge you need, everything is supplied by the Atma from within. Paramatma is supplying everything to the Jivatma in the vacant state. In the vacant state. And there, you don't have the clarity what Paramatma is doing, what Jivatma is doing. Is it not? You don't know what is Paramatma doing and what is Jivatma doing. But in the dream state, have you noticed what happens? In the dream state, you are seeing yourself that separately from yourself. That means the Jiva is doing everything. For example, you are watching, your head is getting cut off, and you are seeing this separately from the Jiva. So this combined activity in the vacant state between Paramatma and Jivatma gets separated in the dream state. If you think about it, when you have time, analyze it yourself, how it happens. That as soon as you go into the dream state, what happens there? You are lying there, you are dreaming. In the dream state, you are doing so many things. You are talking in the, say for example, I am talking in this class, people are sitting there and listening, I am sleeping and I am seeing this. So, Jiva is that one which goes and does everything in the dream state, and Atma is that one which lies down and watches all these things. You see the difference between the vacant state and the dream state? These are things you have to think about it, because when you analyze it, you see whatever Krishna has spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is clear proof also for that. And these three states, vacant state, dream state, and the deep sleep, if you keep on observing that, you will see that in the vacant state, you are not getting this clarity, what you are getting in the dream state. In the dream state, it is crystal clear. You are sleeping there. And you are observing everything, that you are doing things and you are seeing it separately. And that separation between Atma, Jivatma and Paramatma happens there. At that time, in the Paramatma is watching everything what Jivatma is doing. It is based on that verse in the Bhagavatam, Suparnavedo Sadrashav Sakhayam. In the next chapter you will see the two birds sitting on the tree. That verse has come from that. This is the beauty of the dream state. In dream state, you can do so many things, and what you are doing, you can stay separately and watch what you are doing yourself. Just like in the dream, you are seeing, you are running through a long desert and you are thirsty, looking for water. Or you are being attacked by an elephant, with a powerful elephant or a tiger or something like that, or a snake. So why is that Krishna is created like this? This is the most interesting thing. That in vacant state it is difficult to separate it, because vacant state we are doing things. Whatever mind tells us to do, we keep on doing it. Is it not? Never time to analyze anything. But in the dream state you can see all these things are separated very well between the vacant state and the dream state. And funny thing is, as soon as you come out of that vacant state, you realize everything, you're saying that everything was false. Or I dreamt like this last night. And whole life you have been dreaming various things, and all that you have forgotten now. What all we have dreamt. You can't even remember what we dreamt yesterday. This is how our situation is. So what Krishna is saying, what Krishna is saying here, suptasya vishaya loko. Krishna finished the whole thing in two words. This is Bhagavatam. suptasya vishaya loko. Suptasya vishaya logam. Suptasya vishaya logam means you are in one world in that dream state. In the dream state, suptasya vishaya logam, when you have woken up, that world is gone completely. You are back into this world, vacant state. Dhyayatova manorathe. Dhyayatova manorathe means while in the vacant state, we are dreaming. Various things we are dreaming. There is very little we think actually to do something here. Most of the time we are thinking, planning, dreaming. So many eyes are open, but busy with the activities of this world, or what you have thought about something, you're planning, chewing again. That's what Krishna is saying here. Suptasya vishaya loko dhyayatova manoratham. Nanatmagatva vibalat tadha bhedatmanir gunai. Krishna is saying that this thing called dream state and this thing called vacant state where you are dreaming is not much different. Nanatmagatva vibala tadha bhedatmanir gunai. Suppose in your proper vacant state you are making some decisions. You are planning certain things in your life in your proper vacant state, not dreaming state. All these three states are all useless. Krishna is saying. Krishna's statements are sometimes very hard to digest for us because of our conditioning. That way. Krishna is saying to us, suptasya vishaya loko dhyayatova manorathai nanatmagatva dibala tadha bhedatmadir gunaihi. The beautiful verses in the Bhagavadam that nanatmagatva, the reason, you know why Krishna is saying that? Nanatmagatva vibhalam, he says, tadha bhedatmadir gunai. In your vacant state, whatever you are doing, so called vacant state, whatever you are doing, there is nanatvam there. Nanatvam. Nanatvam means that you are seeing everything separate. Nanatmagatva vibhalai tadha bhedatmadir gunai. There you have got Vedabuddhi. Once you have Vedabuddhi inside, and based on Vedabuddhi, if you are making any decisions in this world, and your so-called contact with this world is all considered to be similar to the suptasya vishaya lokam or dhyayatova manorathai. Krishna is saying the only real state is self-realized state. All other states are bogus. This is Krishna's conclusion. Only self-realized state is genuine. All other states are ignorance. Whether it is vacant state or in the dream state or in this Jagrat Swapnam state it's called. Where you are in the vacant state but you are dream Swapnam. In the Swapnam. That's why it's called Jagrat Swapnam. Swapnam, Jagrat Swapnam and Jagrat. Three states. In all these three states, whatever is happening, as far as Krishna is concerned, it's all false. That's why that verse is enough to transmit a lot. It's so much spoken about these verses in that 10th chapter. And similarly, if you go into the next, I'm just giving you one or two examples, then we'll go back to this. Take the next chapter, 11th chapter. Krishna is saying here, that second verse, if you took shogam, moham, sukham, dukham, dehapatischa mayaya swapnam yathatmana khyadir samsidir natu vastavi. When you have lot of distress coming in life from different sides, just take Bhagavadam and read these verses. You will find a big relief, provided you accept Krishna, only then. If you accept Krishna's authority and if you accept Krishna's knowledge, we may or may not have accepted. That's another thing, because our mind is like that. Great personalities, great devotees, great jnanis, they have accepted Krishna's knowledge. So why shouldn't we accept that? So this is the remedy. When we have great difficulty, distress in life, just all you have to do is to take Ekadasi Skandam and read these few verses here, there. It will completely make you realize that what stupid we are. How stupid we are. See what Krishna is saying here. Shokam, moham, sukham, dukham. Four things. Hankering and lamentation, happiness and distress. Dehapatischa mayaya. Because you are identifying with the body, maya is playing with you with that. And then, svapnam yadalpanakhyadi, samsirdir natu vastavi. None of this is vastavam, is truth. It is material existence itself is not truth. Krishna is saying there. Svapnam yadalpanakhyadi. Just like in the svapnam state, how you identifying, and how is that when you come out of the dream state, you are feeling okay, you are sad, happy about it. Oh, that has happened in the dream, you are able to leave it behind, isn't it? Even if there was a disaster in the dream, when you wake up, you feel okay. You feel, oh, it was just a dream. And you are able to drop it straight away. And doesn't bother you anymore. Perhaps for a few minutes it may be there, but then ultimately you drop it. Krishna is saying, samsradir natu vastavi. Your existence in this world, in this body, and this material existence is also not truth. Exactly like in the Supnam Yadhalpana Khyadi. That is the beauty of these verses. Shoga moho sukham dukham deha batischa mayaya sapno yadalpana khyadir samsidar nadu vastavi. None of them is true. This is the important message. That is why Ekadasha Skandam, as Prabhupada has written in the, you will see in the commentary on the third canto itself, while Uddhava was talking to Vidura, in the commentary you will see that higher than the Bhagavad Gita is this knowledge in the Ekadasham. It is specifically written there. Higher than the Bhagavad Gita is the knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has not become so personally told us things, like the way he has spoken in the Ekadasha Skandam. So whenever you feel some problems in life or difficulties in life, take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam will open up our heart. But there is no other way. If you look into personalities to help, that personality also will be in trouble sometimes. But these books will never be in trouble. Srimad Bhagavatam won't give you that problem. These verses are meant for that. In such a nice way, Krishna has spoken there, everything. Suptasya vishayalokam dhyayatova manoratham nanalpadatva vivala tada bhedalpadir gunai. So, in this way, what it is that these words are coming from that source, original, from Krishna directly it is coming there. So, in the going back to this, why we were saying this was that transmission of spiritual knowledge happens only in the proper realized state. Proper realized state. Dakshinamurti is talking and the rishis are listening. And when they get the answer, they go. And then they come back again with more doubts. So from this, what we have to understand is, asking question and getting an answer is not the way to advance in the spiritual path. That is a very, that is for the university. We'll have to leave it to them and the colleges. That's their way. And that way won't work here. Asking questions, if, as I mentioned before, is there's not only one doubt, there is hundreds of doubts around, isn't it? So if one doubt is answered, then it will create another 100 doubts inside us. If one doubt is answered. Therefore, this question-answer business, earlier we give up, is a better. Only then you will start going inwards. Otherwise you will think, oh, I got the question. Some people say, I've got a few questions for you. They come and listed all questions. Like Paul Brandon did, he's asked like that. And then, if you are happy with that, 6 questions answered, it will be nice. But after the 6, another 600 questions comes after that. What's the use of this? That's not how spiritual life, Brahmavidya is inward, going inwards. And that comes from silence. That comes from silence and listening, Shravanam. And Shravanam creates that silence inside. Shravanam creates silence inside. We learn how to go inward, looking for that truth. Because otherwise, all these rishis, they did not sit and write stories for us. They are not storytellers. We have some misunderstanding about that. Oh, it's all some stories. No, they are not storytellers. Let's understand that. They are people, personalities who gave knowledge to us. That is their strength. The knowledge of the self, Brahmavidya it is called, and that is their strength. So here also you can see that only to show to us verbal question answer is very limited. It's very, very limited. So they give the example that somebody is asked a question and you have answered that question. It is like you cut your hair, it comes back again, isn't it? It's something similar to that. So for 1 year, between the four Kumaras and Lord Shiva, this went on. They went to him, Lord Shiva, and asked questions. Lord Shiva answered and they went back. They again came. For 1 year, this was going on between Lord Shiva and the four Kumaras. And one day when they went to him, he kept silent. He didn't answer anything. When they asked questions, he didn't answer anything. Because that day he wanted to show them the power of silence. The power of silence. So after a while they stopped asking questions. They sat there in silence. Lord Shiva also sat there in silence without answering anything. And they were thinking that after a while that Lord Shiva will start answering the questions. But he didn't answer. But by then what happened? The mind of the Kumaras, from where the doubts were coming, that mind has become subdued and became silent. The mind itself became silent and all their thought waves stopped and they lost their identification with the body, and this thing that they are a personality, that itself was lost, and the world has disappeared from them, and inside they experience the realization of the self. And this is what happens in the self-realization state also, if you remember. Vidyade hridaya grandhi chidyande sarvasam shaya kshiyande chasya karmani drishtame valpani ishvare, in the Bhagavatam. That is what that verse means. I think people think that chidyande sarvasam shaya, all doubts have gone, means he has asked all the questions and he has got all the answers. That's how most of the people have misunderstood that verse. That is not how it is. Because you will never know when your questioning is going to end. And you will never know when the answering is going to end. So questioning and answering is not the process. And this is what exactly happened here also. After a while, the Kumaras realized that, because what they noticed themselves, because they are also very thoughtful people, what they noticed was, we are not having any more doubts in Lord Shiva's presence. Earlier they were thinking like us, they came and asked questions and they went home. And then the questions were coming, more questions were coming. But now what happened? Vidyade hridaya grandhi chidyande sarvasam shaya kshiyande chasya karmani drishto evalpani ishvare. That realization started coming from inside. Where is the question of doubts then? Doubts have gone away. Doubts, they have said goodbye to the doubts once for all. Because this doubts business and questioning business and all is only in the very, very early stages. See, for example, if somebody who doesn't know anything about Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, when you are giving him a book, you have to talk some things about him, about the book. And you have to introduce the book. You have to say who is Krishna, who is Arjuna, what is spoken in the book, things like that. That you have to do at a particular stage in the early days. But after you have studied Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and if you have not understood this principle, that means you haven't understood Bhagavatam. That's what it means. That Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, like the Upanishads, it's the same level. That Bhagavatam is nothing but the message in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Vedanta Sutram and in the other Upanishads, all ground very well and prepared like a paste and given to us in the Bhagavatam. So that understanding has to come by now, that this questioning and answer will not be the solution to the problem. So he says here that what happened to him at that time, he says that hridaya grandhi vidyate. The hridaya grandhi inside, knot of attachment, that broke down. That broke down. Chidyande sarva samshaya. There is no more doubts coming inside. Kriyande chansya karmani. Karmam is over. No attraction to karmam anymore. Whereas all of us are attracted to karmam, isn't it? We can't even imagine without karma what life in this world. Unless we work from, like we discussed last Sunday, that the asuric nature is such, whole day we want to work for Mahalakshmi, and in the evening we want to go and exchange it for Varuni. This is the our mind, this is how we are, this is the level of our state, this is our state of affairs. And in this state, to expect that perfection, what Krishna is saying, whereas Upanishads are saying this, this verse is from the Upanishads, this Vidyadehadeh Granthi. There is only one slight difference there. In the Bhagavatam, Drishto Eva Atmani Ishvare, in the Upanishad, Drishto Eva Paravare, it says in the Upanishads. So, in one instance, Ramana Maharshi is one famous disciple, Muruganar Swamiji, he asked that this Dakshinamurti Sotram, we are slowly coming into Dakshinamurti's prayers, that Sotram, which needs an introduction, otherwise you will not understand why it is so important. That in this Dakshinamurti Sotram, Muruganar Swamiji asked him that what is the principle of this Dakshinamurti Sotram? If you can distribute that verses. The first verse. Maunavyakhya prakatita para brahma tattvam yuvanam varshishtandai vashadarshiganai avrudam brahma nishtai acharyendram karakalita hachin mudramananda rupam swatmaramam mudita vadanam dakshinamurti me de. That verse. That Maunavyakhya Pragadita Para Brahma Tattvam Yuvanam. Maunavyakhyam. Through silence, self-realization is explained. Through silence. Maunavyakhya Pragadita Para Brahma Tattvam Yuvanam. In one instance, on a Shivaratri day, that in Tiruvannamalai, they were going on a parikrama of the mountain, Tiruvannamalai, the mountain itself. And on particularly, like we have in Govardhana parikrama on a Purnami day, the devotees go around the hill, Purnami day, they go on a parikramam around the hill. So there was one school teacher. He was local school teacher. He was a disciple of Kavyakanta Ganapati. Kavyakanta Ganapati was a very famous personality at that time. Mahatapasvi, there is a book about him called Mahatapasvi. Tapasya means he has performed such severe austerities and penances in Ganga River bank and achieved that higher state of realization. And it is his disciple. He had over 10,000 disciples at that time. So, his Kavyakanta Ganapati's disciple is this teacher, school teacher. And not only that, he has been brought up in the pure tradition of Vaidika Dharma. That means from a very well learned in the Shastram from the early days in life, and trained up properly. And not only that, he has studied Vedam, but Vedam along with its commentary, he has studied them. Veda Bhashyam. With Bhashyam he has studied everything. On that particular day, he was also thinking of going on this parikrama with all other devotees. But he was feeling physically not very well. He couldn't walk that distance. It's about 14 miles or so. So he goes to Ramana Maharshi and sits in front of him. There were four of them sitting there. And they asked Maharshi, "Can you explain to us this Dakshinamurti Stotram?" he says. And this was in the night, about 9 o'clock or so. They were sitting there. And Maharshi also sat there. It was 1 o'clock. They have not spoken one word each other. Nobody has spoken one word. They put this request to him, Maharshi, and sat there. Maharshi hasn't said anything. Hours have gone, and there were no more further questioning, no more answering either. And then the sun was rising in the morning. They were sitting there like this. Hours, from 9 o'clock in the evening, in the night, and till morning 5:30, 6 o'clock, they were sitting there. And nobody felt like asking anything, and Maharshi didn't speak one word either. And that is what this is. Maunavyakhya Prakatita Param Brahma Tattvam. There, what happens is, once you come to that stage, there is no more the person who is asking, and there is no questions, answers, and there is no person who is answering the question. Everything disappears. If you reach that state of consciousness, the person who is asking doesn't exist. Who is the person asking? Ahankaram inside. Isn't it? That is a false thing. Question-answer is also false thing. And who is answering? That is also false thing. Why? Because where is the answer coming from? Inside. So waiting for an answer to come from outside itself is the wrong thing. The question is coming from inside, answer is coming from inside, and the person who is asking this question is false as well. So, that is what that first line itself. Maunavyakhya prakatitapara brahma tattvam yuvanam vashishtande vasadrishiganai avridam brahma nishtaihi acharyendram karakalitachin mudranam verubam swalparamam mudidavadanam dakshinamurtimideem. Then they didn't go that day, and in the morning when they woke up, that this Dakshinamurti Stotram, you will see here, Dakshinamurti is not spoken as a person in this stotram. Instead, it is spoken as a tattvam. As a tattvam it is spoken. Because ultimately, it is tattvam that is important. Personal form, we give it to them. To all the different personalities in the Puranas are forms that's given to the tattvam. Tattvam is the origin. But tattvam is spoken in the, for example, you will see in the Bhagavadam that Vasudeva Sankarsana Pradyumna Aniruddha, isn't it? They are the four forms of mind, intelligence, false ego and chittam. These four things. Manasa Buddhi Ahankaram Chittam. In its personified form, we call it as Vasudeva, Sankarsana, Pradyumna, Aniruddha. Isn't it? So, in the similar way here, Guru Tattvam, that Dakshinamurti is not spoken as a person, more or less it is spoken like a Tattvam. That is why, you'll see at the end, that Swalparamam Mudidavadanam Dakshinamurtim Mide. Dakshinamurti Mide. So, that Dakshinamurti is a name that comes end of every verse. So, Acharya Swami, when he wrote this, he says, "I pay my obeisances to that tattvam which is in the form of Dakshinamurti." That is how he says. He doesn't say, "I pay obeisances to the person." He says, "I pay obeisances to that tattvam which is in the form of Dakshinamurti here." So, Dakshinamurti is that personality who is representing that tattvam. So, for example, In fact, it is called Dakshinamurti Stotram, but actually this is not in that sense a stotram. The topic that is discussed is highly deep subject, very, very deep subject. Praudham Gambhiram, it says. Prauda Gambhiram. That it is so deep-rooted subject, and out of all the various songs and stotrams and Prakarana Granthams and Bhashyams, Ajarya Swamiji has written, most profound of all of them is this Dakshinamurti Stotram. Most profound, because Ajarya Swamiji's Bhashyam on this, he has written his commentary on the Vedanta Sutram, Brahma Sutram in other words, then the major 10 Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, all the commentaries are famous. But only in reality they say, those who are advanced in knowledge, they say, only those people who have studied all of them in depth and understood them or realized it, they alone will get a full understanding of this Dakshinamurti Stotram. For example, you can see Ajarya Swamiji wrote so many kirtanam, isn't it? Like Jagannatha Ashtakam, Jagannatha Swami Naina Pratagami Bhavandame. These are all one of the stotrams what he has written. There are many others, Govinda Ashtakam, similarly Krishna Ashtakam, and there are Ganga Ashtakam, Yamana Ashtakam. So many stotrams he wrote, and Narasimha Murthy, famous prayers to Narasimha Murthy and like that. All Ramachandra, addressing Ramachandra. In all these prayers, you will notice one interesting thing, that first he will speak the tattvam and then say, that tattvam who has come in the form of Ramachandra, or that tattvam who has manifested in the form of Shiva. In that way, it will be spoken. So here also, then, this stotram, the Dakshinamurti Stotram, that to understand that properly, 100%, it is difficult, because only those who have understood Bhagavad Gita very well, Brahma Sutram well, Upanishads well, only those people will be able to completely capture the message that is being given in this Dakshinamurti's prayers. So Sureshwara Acharya, one of the four disciples, he wrote a commentary on this book. It's called Manasollasam. Manasollasam, that the mind absorbed in that truth. Mind absorbed in the truth. And in the form of a song, he has translated that. And then after writing that, he felt that wasn't enough to explain that. So what they call in the Shastram as Vartigam. He wrote a Vartigam for that. And from that you can understand, in his time, how powerful this book was. It was influential. So he wrote this, he wrote in a song form called Manasollasam, and then to explain that he wrote another book to give more details. So in his commentary, what he has written there, that every one verse he is explained in one whole chapter, long chapter. Many other people have also written commentaries on this, and therefore they also call it as Dakshinamurti Upanishad. They call it like that. To that extent it is a profound literature. And but the topic of discussion in this Dakshinamurti Stotram is the same topic what we are always talking about, which is self-realization. Realization of the self, or what we call it as knowledge of the self, or Brahmavidya, or Brahmajnanam, Tattvajnanam. So only for the sake of receiving this knowledge of the self, Brahmavidya, we have what we call the spiritual master, isn't it? Spiritual master's responsibility is to take the disciple to realize the truth. That is the main connection with the spiritual master and the disciple. In reality, there is only one spiritual master. There is only one. We think there are many spiritual masters. We think like that. But in principle, Guru is one. And that you can see here, and it is called Guru Tattvam. In the Bhagavatam, Krishna takes this to Uddhava. Have you noticed that? If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see Atmano Guru Atmaiva Purushasya Visheshada Pratyakshena Anumana Abhyam Shreyasa Manuvindade. I think it is in the 7th chapter. When Krishna begins the instructions to Uddhava, First thing, what he wanted to tell Uddhava is, Guru is one. There is not many Gurus. Don't go by the bodies. Bodies are many. But Tattvam is one. Tattvam is one. And that Guru Tattvam Krishna has spoken there. If you look into the 20th verse in the 7th chapter, 11:7:20. Almano Gurura Almaiva Purushasya Visheshada Pratyakshena Anumana Yat Pratyakshanumana Abhyam Shreyasam Anuvindade. He says, Almanaha Guruhu Almaiva. Atma or yourself alone is the Guru. Atma is the Guru. Uddhava is Krishna says to Uddhava. Isn't it? That is the straight way after instructions he begins this. First thing Krishna is saying that. Prayana manija loka lokatattva vichakshana samudharandi atmanam atmaneva shubhashayat. That's the first verse. Then he says, Atmano Guru Atmaiva Purushasya Visheshada Pratyakshena Anumanabhyam Shreyasam Anuvindade. Even if a guru comes outside in the form, what does he do? He wakes up the guru who is inside. That's what he does. The real guru is inside, but in order for him to wake up, that guru takes a form and comes outside and wake him up inside. So that guru inside is actually doing everything. The guru who is outside, all he does is he wakes up that guru inside. So that Guru Tattva, that Guru principle is called Dakshinamurti. It's called Dakshinamurti. So where is the purpose of Guru? Where is the purpose of Guru comes? Where does it come from? When does the purpose of Guru comes? For example, only when a lamp is burning, you can light another lamp from that. Isn't it? For example, suppose you have got a photograph of a lamp. From there you can't light another lamp. You need a lamp that is burning. That is Guru. Only if the lamp is burning, from that lamp you can light another lamp. Not from a photograph. Suppose you have a video of a lamp, from that you can't light another lamp. So similarly, that a lamp is necessary to light another lamp. Similarly, only in a center, that is what we call the spiritual master, where the knowledge has woken up there, bodham, avabodham or awareness has woken up there, only from that center you can transmit that awareness to another center. Just like example, the same example is famous. That from a burning lamp, you can take the wick and light another lamp. Similarly, if a person is realized, and from that person, you can transmit that realization into another person. Exactly like the lamp. Oh, that's the only way it is possible to happen. And that is why that transmission of awareness, this person is already realized. And that person who is realized, from him, that bodham or awareness can be transmitted to another person, and that's the only way it will work. Anubhuti, it is called. So therefore, that is why we are very particular that the spiritual master has to be established and self-realized. Has to be established in the state of self-realization. He has to be realized and he has to be established in that state. And that is why we'll see there, we have spoken this before also, that while talking about that person, Shrotriyam Avrajinom akamahatoyo brahmavittamaham brahmanivaradashantho nirindhanam ivanala ahetukadaya sindhu bendur anamadam sadam. These are all his qualifications. Shrotriyam avrajinam akamahatoyo brahmavittamaham. It is only from that person. It's the description of a spiritual master. A person, Shrotriyam, he must have heard Shastram. And then avrijinam akamahatam hato yo brahmavitama. He is, must be Brahman realized. He must be realized. And he must have what he has realized. He must be able to put it through words to the other person. And he should have the words for that. Which means that he must have proper realization of the philosophy, Vedanta philosophy. That means he must have heard Shastram very well. Then what else he says there? Akamahato. He should not be motivated. If he has motivations behind it, then it won't work. And he must have realized that truth inside very well. And not only that, Brahma Vittama Brahmanyu Parata. He must be in that state all the time, in the Brahman realized state. They give here example, Shando Nirindhana Ivanala. Just like if you burn the firewood, when the wood is completely burned, fire is still there. Fire does not go away. Because if you want to light another fire, fire comes back. Is it not? So, when the wood burns, if you look at the wood, it turns into ashes. Wood turns into ashes. And you think that the fire is finished. Fire is not finished. Fire still remains. You can't see it at the moment with the fire. But fire is there somewhere. So, similarly, just like vasana inside us, we have vasana inside us. That in the mind, all these vasanas are present. Inside our subtle body, the vasanas are present. And completely the vasanas must be gone from him, totally. That is what that word, Nirindhana Ivanala. Nirindhana Ivanala means that indhanam or fuel has gone completely. Our fuel is our vasana. That's our fuel now. Isn't it? That fuel inside us is the vasana. It is that vasana that is working whole day and night, all the time through us. And ahaituka daya sindhu. First thing is that he is so compassionate to people, those who have come to him, that he is not expecting anything from him. Expecting anything from them. Not expecting anything in return, but on the other hand, he wanted to offer this knowledge of the self to them. And Nirindhana Ivanala Ahaituka Daya Sindhu Bindhu Anamatam Satam. Then those who are taking his shelter, he should be like a person who is dependent for them. Such a personality, if he delivers the message, then and if he is in that state, if he is delivering the message, and similarly, if the disciple also matured, like the way Krishna has spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam, then it will work. Otherwise, it is useless. This is the... because the disciple also, Krishna has put certain conditions in the Bhagavatam, you know what he says there. Is it not? If you look into Bhagavatam, that both the spiritual... Krishna, when Krishna starts talking to Uddhava, what did he say first thing? He said, what is a guru? What's a disciple? That's what he first defined himself very clearly. He says there that that Acharyoraniradhyasyal, 10th chapter, 11th canto, verse 12. Acharyoraniradhyasyal andevasyuttararani tal sandhanam pravachanam vidyasandhisukhavaha vaisharadi sadhi vishuddha buddhir dunodhimayam gunasam prasudam gunamscha sandahyamedalpamedal Soyanjasamyat asadan asamin yathagni. So, here he is talking about that while coming back to the that whole chapter is basically tattvam spoken very eloquently in that chapter. Krishna has spoken to Uddhava the whole principle of spiritual life, the connections between the spiritual master and disciple. First thing is that the disciple has to be matured.
disciple has to be matured.
And therefore what Krishna says, when he started the chapter itself, you see that 5th and 6th verses, 5 and 6. 5 is the guru, 6 is the disciple.
What did he say? Yamana bhishnam seveta niyaman malparakvachil madavityam gurum shandam upasidam madal makam.
That is guru. Then disciple, amanyamal sarodaksho
nirmamo dradasau hrda an asatvaro artajinyasu anasuyo amokhavak.
If all these things are there in a person, then it will fire. All the cylinders on fire then. That's what will happen. Because it's perfect. Both spiritual master is perfect, disciple is perfect. Only then this transmission will work. Otherwise it won't work. Krishna is saying that there. So, it is from there everything begins later. Coming. That whole chapter is so important, the 10th chapter, the 11th canto. And Krishna said many, many things there. Every single verse in that chapter is like a bombshell. For those who are serious about spiritual life, you will see there that 32, look at 32. Yaval syal gunavaishamyam tavannana atvamalpana nana atvamalpano yaval paradandram tadaivahi yavadasyal asvadandratvam tavadishwarado bhayam ya edal samuvasiram te muhyandishucharpidaha. Those two verses is a beautiful way of negating so many other religions who talk about that you'd be frightened about God, is it not? That's how they put the fear into their head, in our head first. They say to us, oh, if you do these things, God will punish you. And he is sitting there up there watching you, what you are doing. And he makes a judgment. Every religion you will see this. There is a judgment day later, and you will be put through the torture and all kinds of things. Krishna says, no, no such thing. He says, Yavalsyal gunavaishamyam tavan nanatum alpana. Right now, if nanatum has gone from you, nanatum alpano yaval parandram tadevahi. Gunavaishamyam nanatum is in us, and that is what is causing the problem. And as long as nanatum is there, parandram tadevahi, you are always under the control of paradandrata, helplessness. You are under the control of this material nature. Paradandram tadevahi. Then he says, Yavadasyal asodandratram tavad ishwarado bhayam. Then this helpless state, if you keep on living, you will always be frightened about your God, he says. God is saying this to us. As long as you are having this helpless state of asodandratram, tavad ishwarado bhayam, you have to live always in this fearful state. People have this misunderstanding that God is somebody always ready to get onto your case and to punish you or judge you. He is always sitting there and judging us and punishing us. This is all religions in this world are built up on this principle. It's only Krishna who says to us, there is no need to be frightened about God. He is saying this. Yavatsala asadandratvam tavadishwaradabhayam. But you have to be frightened as long as you are like this. What he says here. Edat samupasiram te mukhyandi shucharpidaha. So like this 10th verse chapter is the tattvajnanam. From 11 onwards, the explanation to this chapter goes on in detail. Anyway, here, what is this guru-disciple relationship now? A spiritual realized soul, who is a spiritual master in that level, if he instructs this knowledge of the self, like Krishna spoken to Uddhava, in that way, and similarly, if the disciple also, what Krishna says here, Amani, Amalsaro, Daksho, Nurmamo, Drada Sauhrada, Asatvaram, Artajityasu, Anasuyo, Amokavak. Disciples' qualifications listed there. And if both are perfect in these things, then it will work. And the disciple must have that inquisitiveness or curiosity and has the thirst for knowing the truth. And because if you look in the world, everywhere, all what you can see, if your eyes are wide open, and if you look, what you will see is distress here. All that is available in this world is distress, isn't it? And there is distress in the body, there is distress in the mind, and there is distress in the world. Everywhere there is distress in the body, we know that. You don't know when it is going to explode, body. And same thing with the mind, and same thing with the world. As far as body, mind and the world is concerned, what it is packed with distress. It is packed with distress. That is why Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, Janma, Mrityu, Jara, Vyadi, Dukkha, Doshanu, Darshanam. Krishna says, isn't it? So the question comes, is there a truth anywhere unaffected by these things, without affected by any of these things, and how we will able to find that truth? So a person must have that discriminatory power inside, able to think like this. Is there somewhere, some place where it is not affected by the problems like this? What we have in the body, in the mind and in the world. These three places, if you look for happiness, you won't find it. It will always be mixed with a lot of distress. You may find sometime here some spark of happiness, but it will be followed by a tremendous amount of distress with that. So, that person, he is talking about the disciple now, who has that understanding and who is looking for a state where these things don't exist. Between like birth, death, old age and disease, and the distress that's in the pragati or in the world or in the body or in the mind, which does not have any effect, which cannot touch the state. Is there a state like that? And if a person, if a disciple who has that kind of realization inside, and if he is looking for the truth, he will find it. He will find it. And for him, it will work. For him, it will work. But he has to have come to that state first. And this tattva what Krishna has spoken, in words to put it, it is very simple. That is why it is said that if it can be expressed through silence, you can imagine how powerful that is. That how the spiritual master expresses this realization is that how he does that, he gets himself situated in that state. That is how he is teaching us that state. How that realization is transmitted is, he stays in that state of realization. And when you see that, you realize it, that there is a state outside this Jagrat Sapnam Sushupti, where in that state, which is free from all the miseries of the world, miseries of the mind, miseries of the body. Basically referring to the Adhyatmiyam, Adhibhautikam, Adhidevikam, those miseries. Outside these three miseries, they exist. And he says here, while situated in that state, and the power of that, being in that state, is very overpowering. If that person is totally realized state, and if he in his presence, that influence, or it's an overpowering effect that comes from him, and he is silent, but it is very powerful. And similar, what happened, this is what Dakshinamurti has taught the four Kumaras. That four Kumaras understood that asking question and getting answers is not the solution. Instead, being in the presence of Dakshinamurti himself, that they started experiencing that effect in them. The effect is experienced directly, and normally, Maunam, that's what the verse begins, isn't it? Maunam Vyakhya Prakatita Para Brahma Tattvam Yuvanam. That Maunam, that silence is that state inside us. That state inside, where there is no chittavritti, where is no thought waves inside all of us. So, and that silence is the manifestation of the soul. Silence is the manifestation of the soul, and that is our Swarupam. And that is what Krishna calls the Shanti in the Bhagavad Gita. See how it's all connected. Krishna calls it a Shanti in the Bhagavad Gita. Dakshinamurti calls it as Maunam here. And you may remember in Bhagavad Gita how many places Krishna is talking about Shanti. Krishna never spoke about ecstasy. Ecstasy comes in different ways, isn't it? So ecstasy was not given importance. Ecstasy is our, because we have this tendency to enjoy in us all the time. And ecstasy goes along with it very well. So sometimes we feel, he's feeling ecstatic. You say. The problem with ecstasy is it'll come and it'll go. Like so many other things. Anything that is coming and going is not real. It's false. Whereas Shanti, as you can see in the Bhagavad Gita, how many places Krishna has repeated? At least half a dozen places you will see the word Shanti. Bhaktaram yajnadavasam sarvaloka maheshwaram sukhradam sarvabhudanam yatvamam Shanti mruchade. Shanti is the important point. Krishna is pointing out there. And that Shanti is the nature, is what is called maunam here. Maunam means that state in Shanti, where there is no thought waves inside. Once you lose the Shanti, that is when the chalanam happens, the movement happens inside there. So that Shanti state is our state. Is that what we are? Sarubam means Shanti. And that in Shanti it is Nishchalam. Nishchalam means there is no movement inside. In Shanti state. And in order to take us quietly to that state, that is where all Salsangam is meant to be. Purpose of Salsangam is to quietly move away from the world and from the words to the thoughts, and from the finally leaving the thoughts also behind and going towards that Shanti state. So, because that is our Swarupam, that is our identity, actual pure nature of us. It's not this body, it's not the mind, and that is our pure identity. So, two things. Our Shraddha or attention is always, have you noticed, is always in things which are moving. Isn't it? Mind gets easily attracted to something moving. Moving means chalam, achalam, two things in the word. Words there. Chalam means mind, body, and the world outside. All this is chalam. Chalam means it's constantly moving, changing its nature, in a state of flux. Always in a state of flux, isn't it? Mind is always changing, body is always changing, world is always changing. And all our attention in all these three. Is it not? Always if you look yourself, you will see, almost all the time when you are awake, your attention is in the moving objects. When we say moving, not physically moving like that, but where vibrations are there. In the mind, there is always movement. Thoughts are coming, thoughts are going. And your attention is there in the mind. Similarly, in the body, some changes happening. That is the movement. That is chalam means that. Chalam does not mean physically moving. Something happening in the body. Some chalanam. Chalanam means movement. That when some chalanam happens, your attention goes there. Similarly, in the world also, there is always something changing. Somewhere your attraction falls onto that. So, and all great personalities have spoken about this, including Jesus Christ has spoken about this. And if you Google yourself, you'll see this. There's a thing called Gnostic Bible. I don't know whether you have noticed that. If you want to see the details, it is there. That they say, I've taken this from the details that are given there. It says there, a collection of 52 texts, supposedly based on the ancient wisdom, teachings of several spiritual leaders. And this book was also there, mentioned there, that it says there, in that, when you know yourself, then you will be known. But if you do not know yourself, then you are in poverty, and you are poverty. In 1945, a red earthenware jar was found buried near in a place called Nag Hammadi in Egypt. This jar was taken out when they were excavating, and in that jar they found this book, Gnostic Bibles. And what did they do? When they read through that, so many things what is spoken in Christianity could not digest it. The Pope banned it straight away. Pope banned that book straight away, saying that the whole book is Upanishad's knowledge. Jesus Christ has spoken that. It is Upanishad's knowledge. And they didn't allow that book to be published. And the book was written in skin, some leather thing. 1,000 years it was older, that book. And in the jar they have put it in, and they have dug it under the earth, they have put it there. So, so what we have to understand is, even what Jesus Christ has spoken in the Bible's many messages that has come through also, that he has studied Upanishads. Upanishads' knowledge had a considerable influence on him. Otherwise these things wouldn't have come out in the way he has spoken. But because it goes against the principles of the established church, the authorities had to ban them. Lords had to ban them, because otherwise their existence will be in question. This is how religion is all over the world. It happens in Hinduism, it happens in Christianity, it happens in Islam, everywhere. That if you start asking the right questions, they do not like it. They do not want. They want to accept first the authority of the institution and established institution. So all these tattvam, he has spoken. Christ has spoken. And there is a, you know, many devotees have been also researching this, that Jesus Christ spent a major part of his time in India and Kashmir and Jagannath Puri and places like that, where he was trying to study the Upanishads there. And but there he is saying there also, in that book also, he says two things. What in Shastram they say is chalam, achalam. He calls it as movement and rest. Movement and rest. So movement means that that from our false ego right up to this world, what you experience, and everything what you are experiencing in the body, all of it is movement constantly. Because who is moving us every time is the ahankaram inside, false ego, isn't it? So the movement of the false ego and its subsequent actions from the false ego. Because false ego, once it starts working, that's when the actions begin. So in reality, you can say the beginning of action is from the false ego. From the false ego. And and right from that point, up to everything what you see in this world is all movement, isn't it? And where is the rest? Rest is, there is no rest in any of these things. From false ego, the mind, the body, and finally the world, there is no rest. It's all movement. And where is the rest then? Rest is behind all these things, this movement. If you go inwards and look at your own identity, who you are, in your spiritual identity, what you find there is nothing but rest. What Krishna calls it as Shanti. So Shanti is inside hiding, and we, our Shraddha, attention is always in this moving things. It never goes into the thing what is resting there. So, and those two things, both movement and the rest, they stay in the same place in this body. In the Upanishads, it says, Chalachala Nikedascha Yadir Yadrishchigo Bhavet. Gaudapada Acharya, Mandukya Upanishad Kariga, he puts it like this. Now, tell us, where is the difference between what Jesus Christ puts it in the form of movement and rest, what Gaudapada Acharya, who wrote thousands and thousands of years ago in his Mandukya Karika, where he says here, Chala Chala Nikedasmin Nikedascha Yadbir Yadrishchiko Bhavet. He mentions exactly the same thing. So, what Acharya say, Gaudapada Acharya says this, that Jnani, realized person, is Chalachala Niketan. Chalachala Niketan means that even though, this is the symptom of a Jnani, even though the body and the mind is constantly working, moving and changing and doing things. And even though he is doing a lot of things in this world, he is not there. He is with the with Shanti inside. The person is with Shanti, not with the moment. He is in the rest. So inside it is that Achala Tattvam, non-moving, and outside it is Sachala Tattvam, moving. Same Tattvam in two forms. Outside it is moment, inside it is rest. So that inside thing, which is Shanti, which does not move, always stable, always steady, that is called, that Tattvam is called Dakshinamurti. It's called Dakshinamurti. When Krishna answered that question to Uddhava, he finished in one word, because Uddhava asked in one word, answer also one word. Uddhava's question was, Kaja Dakshina. Krishna says, Dakshina Jnana Sandesham. That was enough. Both of them understood what they were saying. But for us, all the explanation is necessary. Otherwise, we will just read, Kaja Dakshina Jnana Sandesham. That's all. So knowing that Achala Tattvam, that non-moving Shanti state inside, knowing that and realize that, and that state, then whatever vyavaharam or activities you do in this world, it will not cause any problems after knowing that. But without knowing that, if you go dive into this world, that will cause problem. That is what our problem is at the moment. Isn't it? Because we don't know that Tattvam inside, that there is a steady, stable, Shanti, stay, which is our Swarupam inside. We don't know that. But we are busy with mind, body, intelligence, senses and the world. We are active with everything. And therefore, all the difficulties as well. But once you know that, and then if you engage in some vyavaharam in this world, it will not cause any problem, because you will, by then, you have become the original person. You have become the real person then. So, so touching that state, Achala Tattvam, and then Vyavaharam in the Sachalam. Sachalam means Vyavaharam, Achalam means non-moving. And then whatever you may do as a householder, or if you are engaged in some higher responsibilities in this world, whatever you may do, none of them will cause any problems, it will not give you any distress, and it will not affect you. If after knowing that self inside, that peaceful existence of Shanti inside, and you have touched that state, you have to touch that state, and then if you conduct any vyavaharam in this world, vyavaharam will not cause any problems. If you haven't touched that state, whatever you may do, vyavaharam, it will affect us. It will affect us. So, first thing is, that state is shown to us. That is where that first verse is talking about. Maunavyakhya pragadita para brahma tattvam yuvanam varshishtande vasadarshiganai avrudam brahma nishtaihi acharyendram karakalita chinam mudramanandarupam Swalmaramam Mudidavadanam Dakshinamurtimide. Swalmaramam. Swalmaramam means one who has touched that state. So here in the Dakshinamurti Sotram also, the process is, first the Acharya Swamiji says, you are in this moving state. You are in the moving state. From this moving state, he is holding our hand and quietly taking us through different verses back to that non-moving state, that Shanti state. Because we only know the moving state. The non-moving state is unknown to us, isn't it? We know Sachalam, we don't know the Achalam. We know the movement, we don't know the rest, that state. So, the same thing you will see in the Kathopanishad. Yama says to Nachiketas, you can see that. We think, and you read Kathopanishad, you see the verse 6, in the second chapter, I think, Didiyavaliya, second chapter, verse 6. Now, he says here,
നസാംബരായ പ്രതിപാതി ഭാലം പ്രമാദ്യന്തം വിത്തമോഹേന മൂഢം അയം ലോകോ നസ്ത്രിപരം വിധിമാനി പുനഃപുനർവശമാപദ്യതേ മേ.
That is Yamadharmaraja saying to Nachiketas. He says to him, my dear son, he says to Nachiketas, Nachiketas is a little boy, he says to him,
na sambaraya pratibadi bhalam pramadyandam vittamohena mudham.
He says here, my dear son, those who believe that this world is the only real thing, he calls them as mudha. Those who think this world is the only real thing, he is a mudha. That such a mudha that he will keep visiting me all the time. He keeps visiting me. These are the people, that means, who think that the world is the only, that is real thing. Nothing else is real. Such people, Yama says here, such people keep visiting me all the time, he says there.
Then, in other words, they have taken a season ticket to go to Yama's place. Yama's place is called Samyaminipuri. So, those who are working in London, they take a season ticket, isn't it? Every day go to London, because they have to visit London every day to work. So, the cheapest is this season ticket. So, similarly, those who believe this real world is the only real thing, nothing else is real except the world, they are the people, Yama says that, they have taken a season ticket to come to my place. That means every time they die, they come to me, and then I send them back, and they'll come back here again. And we got so used to Yama, that when he sees us, he has become very friendly with us. Nice to see you again, he says, when we go back to see him. So, similarly, he says here, this world we are seeing outside, we see it, and we know about this world. And this journey, we are experiencing this world. This journey, Dakshinamurti Sotram and in Kathopanishad also, this journey is that journey from the thing what you are experiencing to the experiencer. Who is experiencing it? What you are experiencing has no meaning. We have taken it very seriously. That's the problem. What you are experiencing in this world has no meaning. That is the first principle. That from what you are experiencing, from that to the experiencer, who is experiencing it, that journey is Dakshinamurti Stotram. Dakshinamurti Stotram. So, because you know the reason for that? This world has got a very powerful effect on us, isn't it? All our attention is pulled by this force of the world. Is it not? 24 hours, where is our attention? In the world. World is catching hold of our attention. For example, if you say to somebody, why don't you come and listen to Ekadasha Skandam or Bhagavad Gita or Salsangam? He says, yes, we want to come, but what to do? Our prarabdham, I can't come. He says, because so many problems I have, problems with the family, and I got problems with my health, body, everything. So, you start thinking that is all the problem. That who doesn't have that problem in this world? Who doesn't have that problem? In fact, when Krishna appeared, Krishna had this problem. What to talk about everybody else, isn't it? So, Krishna acted and showed to us that when Krishna appeared, that in the platform of the body and the mind, you will always have problem, one thing or the other. And if you think that after all sorting out all these problems, I will go and listen to Bhagavad Gita or Bhagavatam, it will not happen. There is no possibility of that happening, because it is a nature of this world that in the platform of body and mind, problems will always come, one after the other. And after finishing up all, solving all these problems, then you will take to Brahmavidya or Atmavicharam or self-realization. That will not happen in this lifetime. It will not happen in this lifetime. So, just like they give this example, that you went to the sea to bathe in the sea. When you got there, continuously powerful waves are coming. So you are saying, let the waves all stop, then I will get into the water to bathe. Will it happen? Waves will never stop.
It will keep coming, 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 one after the other. Similarly, finally you will see that if you get involved, that the life itself will completely take us away from here, finally, isn't it? So, similarly, this world is sucking your energy all the time, in one way or the other. And that is what is the most difficult thing. And as long as the world is sucking our energy all the time, it is difficult to move out of this. And that is why the world is so powerful, we say, Vishwam. So, that is why in Vedantam, they are not interested to tell you whether this world is real or false. Real or false. Because that is not the purpose here. And Vedantam is not interested in giving you an explanation to this world. Where did this world come from? Isn't it? Because even a little child will know this, that this world, you cannot explain this properly. Nobody can explain this world properly. But great personalities, realized souls, if you ask them, they will not explain the world. If you notice that, they will not explain the world. Because what they say, it exists, it doesn't exist. It exists, but it doesn't exist also. And it is not possible to explain it also. That is the situation. And they have no intention to explain this world because they are explaining this because you are asking about it. And that is how all this explanation of the creation has come into Bhagavatam and other places. In so many Puranam, so many ways, explanation. We say, oh Brahma, we say. So just like you can give this example, it is for the person who is asking the question, the answer. The answer. So, two types of people are there. Somehow or the other, if a person has a question, where the world has come, he has an inquisitiveness inside. So we want to satisfy him. For that purpose, it is given, this answer. There is not much difference. Like for example, the modern science, right? It is keep on going like this. For how many years we are hearing all these scientists and their research work and their results? They found another planet 2 days ago. One more planet they have found, and they have given a name to that also. And they are saying that's the one which is closer to Earth, they are saying. Now they are saying that. All these years they were talking about going to Mars and see if there is water there in the Mars or whether we can build houses there to solve the housing problem. All kinds of ideas going through. Is there any end to this? It will never end. You must have seen that in the last few days this news came about that another planet they have found. Every time they are finding a new planet, they are thinking, can we go there, colonize there also and get our control? This is the mind. So this science will never come to an end. It is gone like this. How many generation after generation this will go like this? So what it is doing to us is, it's wasting or scattering or dissipating our energy. All what we have got is this Shraddha in us, isn't it? The only thing we have is this attention, power of attention, Shraddha. And that Shraddha is sucked by the world in this way. It is sucking all the time. In the form of these planets, the stars, the moon, the sun, the sea, underneath the water, what's happening? All these things. Look at that one aeroplane. People are still searching for it. MH370. Gone. Where is it gone? Nobody knows. They are searching for that. And they say, we'll continue the search. We'll continue till you find it. After 50 years, you'll find it. What happens then? Those people have gone, changed a few bodies by now. Got another bodies, isn't it? And we are relatives are sitting here and crying. And they're saying you have to pay us the money for that. Malaysian Airlines went bust. This is all the after effect of all. What is the use of all these things? This is the problem with this world. World sucks our energy all the time, one way or the other. And instead of solving our real problems, what Krishna has spoken in the Bhagavad Gita, birth, death, old age and disease, all our energy is wasted in this research work. Finding out new planets, universes or something, and a new planetary system, something always new. And they think that if I keep on giving something, feed your curiosity in this way, every morning when you wake up, you see there is a news to tell you something. There is no news actually. The same news repeated in different ways. So that is why they have invented all these new planets and the journey to all these planets. And in that process, all they have done is they have not only spoiled the atmosphere here, they have gone and spoiled the atmosphere in the space also. So you have to go there, the plan to go there, they want to go on tour there, and the things are breaking up there, and their parts are also running around in the sky. On whose head it's going to come and fall, nobody knows that even. So, jijnyasa, as the word in the Shastram, jijnyasa is a power, it's an energy, or energy, and that you are continuously spitting it outside into the world. And so, first thing, what the great personalities, Mahatmas, Rishis, what they have done was that somehow or the other, you have to block it so that your attention don't go into the world so much. This is the reason why in the Vedic tradition they say live simple. For this reason. So that your attention won't go into the world. Because if your attention goes into the world, it's endless then. You can see that in the world. Once your attention starts going into the world all the time, then it will not stop. And this attention or Shraddha is the only capital we have got with us. And that attention, if you are given to the world will suck all your energy and throw your body out, and you are gone and accepted another body. That's the option you have left. So therefore, the Rishis, they found out this. And they said, first, block your Shraddha going into the world. And for example, and therefore what they did was, if they are small children, you can give them some explanations. They will ask, how did this world come? Where did this come from? So, what do you say to them? We'll say to them, you know, Lord Brahma, he's got four heads. He's sitting on that lotus flower. And he's sitting there. And Krishna told him, you create the universe. You create all this universe. And immediately Brahma thought about this. And he created the world. Brahma has created this world. What is the effect of that? Effect is this. If you say this answer to somebody, what is the effect? So, in his mind, he is not asking whether it is true or false. Because he is imagining. We are all like this. Somebody comes and tells us that Brahma has created this world and Krishna has told him to create it, that's why he has created. And then we think, whether it is true or false, how to verify? There is no way of verification, is there? You are accepting it. And you are saying there, that, but at least for that moment, the thought that was in your mind, they had a jijnyasa to know how the world has come. That jijnyasa has gone for that moment. That is the effect of that. And in Vedantam also, they are not interested in telling you where the world has come from. What's the use of knowing this? Even if you know where the world has come from, how is it going to change your life? You will still go through the birth, death, old age and disease. What's the benefit? So that is not the right answer to that. The answer is this, that the reason why it is spoken is that somehow or the other, to shut your mind going into the world, to thinking about this world too much and finding an answer for that. That's not the intention. Because by shutting down there itself, so that your attention don't go into the world. So that chittavritti, thought waves inside about the world, comes to a stop there. So our rishis and the great acharyas, they never gave explanation to things what's happening outside. That's the beauty of Upanishads and Brahma Sutram. Bhagavatam also is like that. But only thing is, you have to touch Bhagavatam into that level. In a surface, Bhagavatam all looks beautiful. Stories, this happened, that happened. Then you are thinking, where did Hiranyakashipu come? Was he in the heavenly planets or in the earthly planet? Where was Prahlada? Where was Chitragedu? Who was this 10 million wives, and where is so many questions. That is all on the surface level. But when you touch the deeper level, you start realizing that the rishis and the acharyas' intention was not to allow us to wander around in this world with our mind. Because if you do that, the world will suck all the energy from us and throw us out, and your life is finished and you're gone. But whatever little time we have here, the intention behind that is that somehow or the other, that your attention should go outside this world, not to go into the world, instead go inwards, that Chit Shakti, Hridayaga, spiritual sky, or so many things what Krishna has spoken in the Ekadasi Skandam, to turn the attention there. Till the attention goes there, our spiritual life is also one of those activity. Otherwise, all the stories in the Puranam, what meaning has it got? What meaning has gone? So, only thing is, when you hear these stories, sometimes you find it very interesting to hear. A happiness. And that happiness itself is the meaning of that story. And don't go into, try to find the logic behind it. That logic will not come from that. But all Puranams are like that. Whether it is Srimad Bhagavatam or other 18 Puranas, if you look, they are all in the same way. So we'll have a short break. Chedo darpanam arjanam bhavamaha dhavagni nirvapanam shreyakaitava chandriya vidharanam vidhyavadu jivanam anandambudivardhanam pradivadam purnamradaswadhanam sarvabna swabanam param vijayate shri krishna sangirtanam magari bahudanija sarva shakti तत्रार्पिदानीमिदास्मरणेन काला एदादृशी तव कृपा भगवन् ममापि दुर्दैवमीदृशमहा निनानुरागाहम् तृणामरवीषुनीचेन हरोरवीसहिष्णुना अमानिनामानदेन कीर्तनीय सदा हरी नथनं न च नन्न सुन्दरीं कवितां वा जगदीशकामये मम जन्मनि जन्मनीश्वरी भवदात् भक्तिरहै दुहित्वये अयि नन्दतनुजकिङ्करं पतिदामांशमे भवाम्बुदौ कृपया तव पादपङ्कजस्थितधूलि सदृशं विचिन्तय नयनं गलदश्रुधारया वदनं गद्गदरुद्धया गिरा पुलकैर्निजितं कदा वपुः तवन्नामग्रहणे भविष्यति युगायिदं निमेषेण चक्षुषा प्राविशायिदं शून्यायिदं जगत्सर्वं गोविन्दविरहेण मे श्लिष्यवा पादरदां विनष्टु माम् अदर्शनां मर्महदां करोतु वा यथा तथा वा विददाधुलं भड मल्प्राणनाथास्तु नैव नापरा मौनव्याख्या प्रकटितपरम् ब्रह्मतत्त्वं युवानां वासेष्टान्देव शतर्षिगणैः आवृतं ब्रह्मनिष्ठैः आचार्येन्द्रं करकलितचिन् मुद्रमानन्दरूपं स्वाल्पारामं मुदितवदनं दक्षिणामूर्तिमीदे. सो क्वेश्चन्स् वेन् इट् इस् आस्क्ड् अबौट् दि due to jinyasa or inquisitiveness in us, we ask the question. So just to satisfy that person's question, some answer is given. Just because the question is there, therefore the answer for that. And once you have the answer, then you are not any more bothered. You got an answer, some answer you got. So be satisfied with that. This creation and all that is like in that category. That's why when you go into Upanishads and all that, creation is not even discussed there. Puranam's creation is discussed. Upanishads don't discuss about creations, because it's not a topic for them. What does it matter? Who created, when created, how it's created? How does it affect you? That creation, it'll come, it'll go. So therefore, for example, but in Puranam, the process is, this is important thing, because when we read Puranams, all Puranam for that matter, including Srimad Bhagavatam, when you read that, you read all the stories, different episodes in the Bhagavatam. When you read all that, you feel certain happiness inside. Oh, there is some hope for us. When you see the history of Ajamila, we start thinking there is some hope for us. Or when you see the history of Chitraketu and others, you start thinking how we start immediately start identifying with it ourselves. And we find that there were also personalities like us before who have taken the spiritual life and found self-realization possible. When you see those persons, Kundi Devi, for example, Parikshit, and Vidura, Maitreya, many other personalities in the Bhagavadam, when you hear and you bring into the personality level, you see their discussions, conversations, their problems of life, you are able to relate with that to some extent. That is the benefit. So that is the only benefit. That is the only benefit. That at that time when you see that how Krishna has looked after Kundi Devi, Krishna has looked after Parikshit, Krishna has looked after Uttaradevi, Ambarish Maharaj and many others, you feel some happiness from that. You feel that there is some hope in taking to Krishna consciousness, isn't it? So that is all the benefit from that. Thing is that suppose, for example, something what is happening in America and it has been told as a fact to you, and by hearing that, if it's creating tension in your head, by hearing that news, it is a fact what has happened there, but all it has done, it's created some tension in your head. What's the use? What's the use from that? So this world we are seeing outside, and this world is constantly sucking all your energy into that world. And you can also see there that the world, the body, the mind, all these three things are constantly sucking your energy, isn't it? What is our energy? Our energy is the Shraddha, attention. That's all what we have. And that Shraddha, that is our only capital what we have in this world. What capital we have is the Shraddha. We have got, and that Shraddha is the power of the soul. Soul has given us this power called the Shraddha. Therefore you are able to focus on something, give your attention to something. And that energy is sucked completely by the world, by the mind and by the body. So if you invest this Shraddha in the world, in the body and in the mind, the whole Shraddha power will completely get wasted in that way. So, but instead, if you use that Shraddha to the place where the Shraddha was born, the location where it was born, that is the soul, Atma, that root where it was born, the same Shraddha, if you utilize it there, then it will end up in self-realization. If that power, Shraddha, what we have, if it you use in the world, in the body, in the mind and everything, it will get dissipated and destroyed and finally it's finished, gone. But if that Shraddha, this is the spiritual understanding of things, if that Shraddha is invested, instead of in the world, body and the mind, into the place where the Shraddha power is coming from, that is the soul, Atma. If you invest it there, it will end up in self-realization. That's the benefit. So whether to use it in the world, or in the body and the mind, or to use it in self-realization, that is in our hands. That's in our hands. So, instead of allowing that power, Shraddha, or for the benefit of development of that self-realization, instead, if you keep on dissipating it or using it in the world, in the body and in the mind, then what will happen? You will become so weak. And at the end, you won't even know that a thing called soul exists. And that is what the problem with the modern education. You educate them to such levels and they get educated. And finally, when you have to discuss them with the soul about it, they can't even recognize that there's a thing called a soul inside. So, in order to, because world will keep on sucking and pulling you into the world all the time, and somehow or the other it creates that jinyasa inside, whether it sometimes in a positive way, sometimes in the negative way, but that jinyasa, that's what it is called. When the jinyasa is the power in the world, coming and sucking our Shraddha from inside, so that jitnyasa has to go. Jitnyasa has to go. You will see in some people that jitnyasa is very strong. In some people, if you observe, you will see this. that those who have developed their intelligence too much, And if you look into their jijnyasa in them, they will not be satisfied with the stories in the Bhagavatam. Little stories won't satisfy them. Problem is that they have gone to study so many things, so many sciences, different kinds of science and history and geology and this ji, that ji, everything. They have gone and tried to learn so much from the books and universities that if you tell them the stories in the Bhagavatam and Puranam, it won't be sufficient for them. It won't be sufficient for them. Because for them what is required is everything. They require an explanation in an intellectual platform. They require an explanation on an intellectual platform. So therefore, it is for that reason only Vedantam is saying to them that this world is not real. Vedantam has no interest to tell you whether the world is real or not. But people are different. For a children, you can tell them so many things, stories. They will accept it to some extent. But a grown-up person who has spent all his energy, shraddha, in this world, all the whole lifetime, and got busy with the worldly activities in this world, and given importance to everything what's going on here, and if your body and the mind, and you have spent all your intelligence absorbed in that, to such a person, if you tell them the stories in the Srimad Bhagavatam or any other Puranam, it won't satisfy him. For him, he require explanations on an intellectual level, because he has made his intelligence to go in that direction. So to them what we say, Vedantam says, is the world is not real. That is when the Vedantam says world is not real. Otherwise Vedantam has no interest. Vedantam is not even interested who created the world, how it was created. So when people come to spiritual life, you can see even our devotees' life, many instances, they've read Srimad Bhagavatam, and there is the Brahma creating different living entities and everything. And it will say also, Brahma's creation happened in this way. On a particular day, and there is four kinds of devastation spoken in the Bhagavatam. Nityam, Naimityam, Prakritam, Atyantiyam. Four kinds of devastation. So, if you start looking at Brahma's creation and these devastations in the Bhagavatam, definitely you are going to get confused a little bit, because the devastation that happens in Nitya Pralayam, Nityam Pralayam, Atyandika Pralayam, Naimitika Pralayam and Prakrita Pralayam, the four Pralayams are different. The devastation that happens in four different times is different. Brahma has got how many 100 years life? And in 1 year is 365 days. In one day of Lord Brahma is 1000 Chaturyugam. One Chaturyugam is Kritam Treda Dwabaram Kali. Four Chaturyugam is one day of one Chaturyugam. Similarly, 1000 Chaturyugam makes one day of Lord Brahma. And in this 1000 Chaturyugam, there are 14 Manus who comes. Each Manu has 71 Manyandaram. 71 Chaturyugam, in other words. Because if you divide 1000 by 14, 71, each Manu gets 71 Chaturyugams. Is it not? And in those Chaturyugam also, if you see, end of Chaturyugam, there is a kind of switch over from one Yugam to another Yugam. Like end of Kali Yugam, again, Satyugam will come back, and there will be a lot of drastic changes happening there. Similarly, each Manu's time, when it changes, when Manu changes, there are changes in the creation. Things happen. Everybody changes. All, like one ministry goes, another ministry comes there. New Saptarishis, new demigods, everybody takes new roles and they take over that time. And then, after every Manu's time, this happens, and then 14 Manu's change like this, and then one day of Lord Brahma finishes, and after that Brahma goes to sleep for whole night. He is sleeping. And then when he wakes up, he starts creation again. Next day of Lord Brahma, he starts creation again. So creation is happening all the time at different levels, at different stages. So whatever we are discussing about creation and all that, in the Puranams, trying to explain that and trying to find some understanding of that is very, very difficult. It's not possible because of this changing nature of the world. Because of the changing nature of the world. Which one are we talking about creation? Is that the first Brahma? Brahmas are also coming and going. So which Brahma created when? Because you can see, one day Lord Brahma is a Kalpam. There is Brahma Kalpam, Varaha Kalpam, Padma Kalpam. Like that, different days, the Lord Brahma is given names for that. And in which Kalpam are you talking about this creation? That question will come. So it's unlimited, it has no end to it. Asking all those questions have no meaning. It will be something similar, like the scientists are doing, exploring the planetary systems. Where will it end? It's never going to come to an end, isn't it? That tomorrow there will be another powerful telescope, more powerful. They'll see something else in the sky. And they'll go after that for a while, and there will be some reports, and it will be forgotten. And this way, this cycle is going on, so it will become something similar to that. That is why Rishis told us, the millions and millions of stars what you find, not millions, billions, what is there in the sky on a clear day, how do you understand all this? Don't put your energy into it. They told us straight away. That if you try to understand that, you will never understand what it's all about. This creation is about. Inexplicable, they say. But what is possible is that instead of giving attention to that, move away from that and find out who is wanting all this information, who is experiencing this. So one person asked this question, why does the Vedanti say, Vedantam says, that this world is not real? So Maharshi answered this, that because you are telling it is real, I am telling it is not real. That was his answer. Because you keep saying it is real, so therefore I am saying it is not real. Otherwise, what explanation can you give to this world? Who can give an explanation to this world? Can the scientists give an explanation to this world? Nobody can give. Nobody can give an explanation to this world. Because you keep on saying it's real, real, real. I keep saying, no, it's not real, it's not real, it's not real. He says, and if you are not saying anything, I won't say anything. Who is concerned about it? He said. Who is concerned about this? He said. So, that let it be whatever it is. Don't worry about it. Because it is sucking your energy all the time. Therefore, we have to say that it's not real. Therefore, take your attention away from the world. Take your attention away from the world. If you go and invest all your shraddha in that in this lifetime, there is not going to be any spiritual life. There is not going to be any spiritual life. So, that is why this question comes. Vishwam, Vishwam. That is a word, isn't it? Vishnu Sahasranam also begins with that. Vishwam, Vishnu, Ashalkaro. Vishwam. Vishwam is this. That which is sucking all your energy. Where did this come from? What is the nature of Vishwam? What's the nature of this world? So, this is if you get that thought in your head, where is it coming from? Where is it going? And all you see is unlimited space. Unlimited space. And where is it all existing? Isn't it? That we say, this planet exists. Where does it exist in the space? And where does that space exist? All the other planets, where do they exist? So, the answer to that is that first question. First verse in the Stotram. You will see there. Look at that verse. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijandargadam pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivod Budham yadha nidraya yasaksha kurude prabhoda samaye swalpaname vadvayam tasmai shri guramurtaye namaidam shri dakshinamurtaye vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijandar gadam pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivo budham yadha nidraya Yasakshan kurude prabhoda samaye swalpaname vadvayam tasmai shri guramurtaye nama idam shri dakshinamurtaye. So every verse finishes that Tasmai Shri Gurumurtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshinamurtaye Dakshinamurtaye. To that Guru Tattvam, Gurumurti, my obeisances, he says. So Gurumurtaye Nama Idam Shri Dakshinamurtaye. Dakshinamurti is considered as Gurumurti. So who is present as Dakshinamurti? Dakshinamurti is Gurumurti. To that spiritual master, my obeisances. And what is the nature of Dakshinamurti? Dakshinamurti is continuously dissipating the knowledge. Sadajara prasaram. Sadajara prasaram. Sadajara prasaram means that knowledge of the self is constantly flowing from him. Flowing from him. Tasmai, two meanings there. You pay obeisances to the Guru. To him and for him. Why? Because every single verse after this, in order that Tasmai Shri Gurumurtaye Namaidam Shri Dakshinamurtaye, in other words, that Tattvam which is spoken in every verse from now on, let that manifest within me as Dakshinamurti, and to him I pay my obeisances. That is how it is. That in order that that Tattvam which is Dakshinamurti, which is present inside me, in my own heart, that let that shine inside. Let that shine inside. At the moment, it is in the cover. It's under cover. Because of the bodily concern. We will understand that when you study Bhagavatam later. That obeisances to Dakshinamurti, because that Dakshinamurti Tattvam, who is present inside all of us, in order that it should shine inside, which means that we will realize the self. So, in every verse from now on, it finishes with that statement. Tasmai Shri Gurumurtaye Namaidam Shri Dakshinamurtaye. So, so, in order that Vastu Sthiti, Vastu it is called, Vastu, in the Bhagavatam also it's Vastu, isn't it? Vastu Sthiti means the state of that Vastu inside. For example, the presence of the Atma inside, it has a particular state. Surupa Sthiti, we call it. Vastu Sthiti. In the Bhagavatam, it's called Vastu Sthiti. Remember? In the Dharma Projita Kaidavotra Paramo Narmat Saranam Sadam Vedyam Vastavamatra Vastu. That Vastu. Vastu Sthiti. That experience of that self, let that happen in me. Like the way the Dakshinamurti is present inside. And for that purpose, in order that it manifests and shines inside, I pay my obeisances to Dakshinamurti. This is the so first verse is the topic is Vishwam. It begins with that word Vishwam. Vishwam, Vishwam, Darpana Drishyamana Nagari. It says Vishwam Darpana Drishyamana Nagari. In 3-4 words, a lot has been packaged into that. Vishwam Darpana Drishyamana Nagari. This way of saying is same like in the Bhagavatam. It's called Anvayam and Vedirekam. Anvayam Vedirekabhyam. You will see in the Bhagavatam. Anvayam Vedirekabhyam Yatsyal Sarvatra Sarvada. When Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken, Sudha Goswami and Shavanagrishi were discussing there, and that mentions there that Anvayam Vedirekabhyam. Anvayam and Vedirekam. So, first time is the Vedirekam. Vedirekam means that from outside going inwards is called Vedirekam. Is called Vedirekam. And from inside coming out is called Anvayam. So, one journey inwards, that is called Vedirekam, and coming out from inside to outward is called Anvayam. So, for example, in Vedirekam, you are continuously rejecting everything. I'm not this body, I'm not this mind, I'm not this intelligence, I'm not this ego, I'm not the senses, I'm not this world. Rejecting continuously everything and going inwards. And finally, after rejecting everything, what exists inside, that's me. What exists, that's me. That is called Vedirekam. And this is the process in the Shuddhigi that you will find this process spoken. And also you will see that in the Nimi Navayogi Samvadam, you will see the same thing spoken there. this Vedregam process. That first you are saying that I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this. And after rejecting everything, whatever that remains, I'm that. That is called Vedregam. But after you are realized who you are, what happens? You come outside and you see that everything is me. That's called Anvayam. That's called Anvayam. So Anvayam Vedregabhyam means this, that you are going out first rejecting everything. So, and so rejecting everything and going inwards is called Vedregam, and then coming out and saying everything is that is Anvayam. That is a system. And in self-realization, if you look exactly, that's what's happening. First everything we reject, we realize the self, who we are. After realizing the self, what happens? We realize everything is me at the end. Is it not? You realize everything is me, that who is inside that. When Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita also, in the Bhagavatam also, you will notice that Srishti Siddhi Pralaya Sadhana, in the second chapter, in the 11th canto. When Stitil Bhava Pralaya Hedra Hedrasya, Pipalayana Maharshi says that, the third chapter. Third chapter, Pipalayana Maharshi statements, that verses 35 to 40. That first he is saying, I'm not this, I'm not this, I'm not this. None of this. I'm not the body, I'm not the mind, I'm not the senses, I'm not the intelligence, I'm nothing to do with this world, I'm none of this, completely independent of everything, I'm pure consciousness. Right? After I have realized that I'm pure consciousness, then what do I say? This body, mind, intelligence, ego, senses, world, everything, it's me. I'm not different from that. Because they have come from me. They come from me. We'll understand that better. So, you can't take out of these two only one thing. You can't only say, I only take the Vedregam. Anvayam I won't have. No. Anvayam Vedregabhyam. Always it is together. If you look into the Bhagavatam, where Anvayam Vedregam is spoken in the second canto, I think, where that is the process spoken to follow the what did you say? Ninth chapter, isn't it? Thirty-five, verse. That is 9:35. Etava deva jityasyam tattva jityasunatmana anvayam vidiregabhyam yatsyat sarvatra sarvada. That verse. So That is when Chadushlogi was spoken, Krishna is saying there, Chadushlogi, that's the fourth verse in the Chadushlogi. He is saying there that Edava Deva Jityasyam Tattva Jityasun Almana Anvayam Vidiragabhyam Yatsyal Sarvatra Sarvada. So that is the process. Anvayam and Vidiragam, both you require. You can't have only Vidiragam or only Anvayam. That's not possible. Krishna is saying there, Anvayam Vidiregabhyam, Vidiregabhyam, Yatsyat Sarvatra Sarvada. Both are required. And Anvayam, Vidirega means going inwards first, and then realizing the self, and then coming out and realizing everything is the self. That's called Anvayam. Going inwards and realizing the self first, and then coming out and realizing everything is the self. Inside going inwards is the Vidiregam, and coming out is the Anvayam. So that is why Vedantam, they say this world doesn't exist. Because you are saying that world exists, you say world doesn't exist. And the same Vedantam in the Upanishad is saying Sarvam Kalidam Brahmam. Everything is Brahmam. Everything is Brahmam. So when we make this statement, those who are on the intellectual platform, those who have taken intellectual process, or what we say is those who are caught up in the intelligence, stuck in that. So because you get stuck in the intelligence, Some people are very particular about their intelligence, isn't it? They think, this doesn't make sense to me, they say. Is it not? They say, it doesn't make sense to me. Sense to whom? Sense to my ahankaram. Paramatma is concerned, he doesn't require any clarifications. He is clear. It is the jiva inside, which is manifestation of my ahankaram, wants a sense. It has its own sense, and it wants sense. So that is where this is coming here, that those who are caught up in that stage, Krishna uses the word, you have seen in the Bhagavad Gita, those people are called Vyamishraneva Vakyena. You will see in the third chapter. Vyamishraneva Vakyena, Krishna says there. Then, Vyamishraneva Vakyena means, which causes contradiction. People don't want contradiction. They are saying, how is that possible? First you are saying, I am not this, I am not this, I am not this. Then you are coming back and saying, I am everything, I am everything, I am everything. How can it be? That's what their question is. This is the problem in the spiritual life. That first we are saying, not this, not this, not this. Then we say, I am everything. So have you gone crazy or what? So that is why here he is saying here that, oh, that is contradicting everything. First you are telling, I am not the body, I am not the mind, I am not the intelligence. Now you are coming and saying, you are the body, you are the intelligence, you are the senses. How can that be? So this is what it is saying here, that what Vedantam is saying, that the world is false, Vishnu Sahasranamam is saying, Vishwam, the world is Vishnu. See that? Vishwam, Vishnu, Vashalkaram. Isn't it? That's how Vishnu Sahasranamam begins. Vedantam is saying, world is false. And Vishnu Sahasranamam is saying, world is Vishnu. See that? See the difficulty in these things, that when we study Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, after all, who spoke Vishnu Sahasranamam? Bhishma. Where did he speak? In the Kurukshetra. When did he speak? When Dharmaputra, Yudhishthira Maharaj and others came to see him while leaving the body. So, and who quotes this? In the later on, Krishna says about this to Yudhishthira Maharaj, to Uddhava about this. This whole conversation in the Mahabharatam, where 1000 names of Vishnu has been spoken by Bhishma, which has become famous later, and there's commentaries on 1000 names of Vishnu in Ramanuja tradition, Shankaracharya tradition, in all traditions. Because of its importance of the way the 1000 names of Vishnu has been spoken. It's got such an important position. There's commentary from all the great personalities. So, the important thing is, Vedantam says, world is false. When Vishnu Sahasranam says, Vishwam is Vishnu. Vishwam is Vishnu. Vishwasmai Namaha, the first offering of the flowers is Vishwasmai Namaha. So, the world itself is Vishnu, is Krishna's manifestation. When is that? After you have realized the Self, not before. After you have realized the Self, the world is Vishnu, not before that. But we are chanting Vishnu Sahasranama, not knowing anything. We are just chanting because our father, parents have chanted, their parents have chanted, we are also chanting. We'll tell our children also to chant. And like this, that chanting goes on like this. But without knowing this, that the after self-realization only, Vishwam becomes Vishnu. Vishwam Vishnu Vashalkara Bhuda Bhavya Bhaval Prabhu. It mentions, begins like that, isn't it? Not before that. If you say this, Vishwam Vishnu, prior to self-realization, it's just words. It's just words. So, and that is why, that Prahlada, now we come to Prahlada Sudhi. Prahlada, when he realized this truth, for him Vishwam is Vishnu. Have you seen that? When Hiranyakashipu is standing there and asking Prahlada, where is your Vishnu? Prahlada says, everywhere it's Vishnu. Nothing else I can see here. This is the difference between a person who has not realized the Self and who has realized herself. Prahlada is realized. So therefore for him, that statement is truth, 100% truth. Hiranyakashipu has no realization. He is like us, standing there and yelling and roaring at him. So they are saying here, both of them are standing in the same place. And Hiranyakashipu is asking, where is he? Where is he? He says, Kwasau, Kwasau, Bhagavatam. Kwasau, Kwasau, where is he? Where is he? He is asking. I can't find him, he says, Vishnu. And Prahlada says, he is everywhere. Kasmal, Stambham, Nadrishyade. If it is like that, why is he not in the pillar? He is saying. Prahlada says, there also only there is Vishnu. He is not seeing the pillar. He is seeing Vishnu there. He is seeing Vishnu there. So, two people, Prahlada and, you can see this, Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu, best example in the Bhagavatam, to show this statement, that once you have realized the self, after that, the world is Vishnu. It is Krishna or Vishnu, the world. Before realization, if you say anything, it means nothing. And here, Hiranyakashipu is standing there. He is seeing the pillar, he is seeing the sword, he is seeing the Prahlada as a little boy standing there. And his, the tables, chairs, everything, what was present there. And the palace, everything. And Hiranyakashipu is thinking, where is Vishnu? I can't see him. He's shouting. Prahlada says, I can only see Vishnu, nothing else. And this is the two world we are standing and talking to each other. Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu. That is why so many things happened in Prahlada's life, isn't it? Hiranyakashipu tried to torture him, kill him, poison him, burn him. But because Prahlada is in that state, what happened to him? What Bhagavad Gita says happened to him? What is that? Achedyoyam, adahyoyam, akledyo shoshyam evaja. Isn't it? You know that verse in the second chapter. You cannot wet that. You cannot dry it. That principle of Bhagavad Gita is in the story form in Prahlada and Hiranyakashipu. For Hiranyakashipu, killing somebody with the sword is killing. Prahlada says, here you cannot kill anybody because the vastu is not made of matter. Vastu is made of achedyoyam, adahyoyam. You can't burn it. And you can't cut it. Akledyo shoshyam evacha. Nityam, sarvagatam, sthanu, achaloyam, sanatana. Prahlada says, isn't it? So, Prahlada in the realized state, Hiranyakashipu in the conditioned state. When you, conditioned state, when somebody talks to a person in the realized state, it won't make any sense. Conditioned person will think in one way, his mind is controlled by so many other world outside. Whereas here, you can see exactly opposite. So, coming back to this point, Vishwam, so important thing is that Vishwam, the world, what the world is doing to us. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijandargadam. That you see here, darpana means mirror, a mirror. If I stand in front of a mirror and look into the mirror, I see my reflection in the mirror, isn't it? For example, if I have some, say, charcoal or black powder on my face, I will see that on the face in the mirror. But if I want to take it out, I can't wipe it out from the reflection. I have to wipe it out from my face. Only then it will go, isn't it? So, because I know that this black powder is not in the reflection. It's not there, it is in my face. So, this mirror, what it's showing to us is only a reflection. And if I have some dust or dirt on my face, it's no point in wiping the mirror. It won't go. I have to wipe my face. And just like when you shave, when you are shaving, suppose I kept the mirror in front of me, and if I keep shaving the mirror, it won't take the hair off. I have to shave my face. This is only a reflection. The mirror is only a reflection. So, and this is a big principle, this thing. That unless you do it in yourself, this won't change. So, and to realize this, this principle. How do we realize that? Because only in a very person, in a one who has gone very deeper in his understanding of life, adhiva sushmam, they say, extremely subtle level, in a meditation, you will understand the reality of this statement. What is that reality? Reality is this, that you are looking into a mirror, and your reflection is in the mirror, and if you want to change anything in the mirror, you have to change your original. Mirror you can't alter. Mirror is as it is. If you have to alter anything, you have to alter on your own form, on your body. Otherwise it won't happen. Similarly, everything in this world whom you are coming into contact with is a manifestation of some vasana what is inside you. All of us. Whomever we come to contact with in this world, man, women, birds, animals, and so many living entities, whomever you are coming into contact with here, is a manifestation of a particular vasana what was inside you, which you have created in millions and millions of lifetimes. You have to always remember this, that this one life is not everything. This is just one blip in the long journey of different bodies we have changed one after the other. Hundreds and thousands, millions, they say, we have changed the body. Even after coming to the human form, we have changed the bodies many, many million times. We don't know which number, what number birth this is, which number it is. Can't even put a number to that because we don't even know that. So therefore, the problem is that in every life, you are collecting new vasanas, fresh vasana. Animals you have collected, birds you have collected, and you can see these, some of these vasanas coming out in some form. Why do we dream about a snake sometimes? Why do we dream about an elephant sometimes? Because that form and that activities has created impressions inside us in some lifetime when we were in that body. That is why without any problem it comes out in the dream, manifest there. Often when we get this, isn't it? Elephants, tigers and leopards and all kinds of bodies, we are able to find coming in the dream because they are the vasanas what you have collected in previous lifetimes. When? We don't know. We don't have the details of that. All we know is this. And that thing, that vasanas, every form which is sitting in front of us, is that subtle vasana what you have inside in its personified form is sitting in front of you. Every person who you come to contact with in this world, not only human form, all other forms as well, 8.4 million different species, all that different forms is a manifestation of the vasana that has taken a form and come out in this way to us. These are all too subtle things to, it is too subtle for us to even to imagine that it is so. We can explain these things, but when you have time, you can sit and analyze all these things. When you have got time, you can, but we don't have the time, that's the situation. So this is something what has to be thought about. Why have I come to contact with this person, not with the other person? Why have I got only involved with this person, not with another person? Isn't it? It is something worthwhile thinking about. Why did this not happen the other way? So there is a subtle reason behind all these relationships that happens to us. Therefore, that is why in Vedantam they say that the disciple creates a spiritual master, because that this spiritual master what you have inside is also a manifestation of some sankalpam inside what you had inside, and that sankalpam or some vasana that was inside you has manifested in a form. It, the fruition of that, the maturing of that, is that form that has come. Because you can see, the spiritual knowledge And transmission of knowledge is very, very pure. It can never be polluted by any person, by any circumstances. But when does it get polluted? It gets polluted when you start bringing it through paramparas, forms, names and everything. Otherwise, in its pure spiritual form, spiritual knowledge, Brahmavidya is the most pure thing in this world, in this creation. The only pure thing, if you want to say something very pure in this world, is Brahmavidya. Because it never gets contaminated by anything. It's so pure. But when it comes through paramparas, when it comes through forms, names, gurus, this, that, so many things, when it comes through, you can see that it will have some influence, or it gets touched by some impurities in some form at some stage. It will happen. For example, everything in this world, when does it get impure? Say, if I speak about something, it gets impure. You know, when you touch with the water, saliva, it's considered impure, isn't it? When you touch with the saliva, something is impure. And this tongue is always in the saliva. So with this tongue, if you touch anything, even if you describe something, even Brahman is the only thing. So therefore, Upanishad says, Brahman is the only thing which cannot be made impure by your tongue. You can make everything else impure here. But Brahman, the truth, Vastu, cannot be made impure. That is the difference there. So all these people whom we are coming into contact with in this world, all of them represent some sankalpam what we had inside us. Some vasana or sankalpam what we have created inside. And that is the reason you can see. Some people when you see, you like them. Some people you see, you don't like them. Why it is like that? Something builds up inside. Some people you say, oh, he's a nice person. He's a good friend of mine. Somebody you say, oh, no, he's not. You don't know him, you say. You make all these remarks about people. Why? Because inside us, our own vasana is dictating from inside. And similarly, some people when you say, oh, you like them very much, spontaneously, you start liking them. And some others, you'll say, I keep a distance from him, you say. Why? Why distance from him? What has he done? You may not have done anything to you, but still, somebody has told me about him, he's like that, keep a distance. Somebody has told you. So you become, and that person, he may not even know about it, that somebody has told you like this. But because somebody has said that, in your mind, that is due to that vasana inside, is coming out. You say, that is the reason why you're not liking him. There is some reason behind it. Because this vasana, which is one inside all of us, it makes us to think, sometimes when you see somebody, oh, you like him, oh, he's a good person, he's a friend of mine. And somehow or the other, an attraction for him. Somebody else, you start hating him from the very beginning. So, So therefore, some vasana inside, which is in the form of an emotion inside, and that emotion in a concrete form is standing in front of you. Then, once you have understood this tattvam, I know it is difficult sometimes to, immediately what happens is, when we say all these things, you'll start looking at everybody else. You'll start, is he my friend or enemy? Is he my friend or enemy? You'll start looking like this. That will happen. But the problem is here, that once you know this principle, that this is how we have come into contact with others, that, for example, Krishna has put us now in a particular time in our history. When I say history means all our several lifetimes, if you take into account all that. In this particular instance, in some family, Krishna has gone and put us there, in that family situation. And even if there are a lot of difficulties in that situation, as much as possible, we should not jump outside from that. This is bhakti. If Krishna has put us in a situation, that is why understanding these things are important. When we don't understand what happens, we think that if I change the situation, we'll become happy. And we try to adjust the situation. That is when we start thinking that, oh, this wife is no good, or this husband is no good, maybe I should find another one. And the search begins. So it will go on from one to another. That is why it says that even if there is a lot of problems in that relationship, no matter what the problems are, whatever it may be, as far as possible, one should not jump outside from that. And because if you remember this principle, that in some point in time, I have created a vasana or an impression inside me, and that created an emotion, and due to that, it has come to me in the form of husband or wife, to me. And that is my own creation, I have created that, either in the form of husband, or in the form of wife, or in the form of children. Even they also, it is a product of that. Some vasana I had in me, sometime in the past, in some form, which was staying inside, was looking for an outlet, and that is manifested in the form of this particular person, as husband or wife or son or even parents. This is the most important thing. We ask the question, why I was born as the child of these parents, not somebody else? What is the reason? Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam vijandargadam pashyannatmani mayaya bahirivo bhudam yada nidraya. That is that verse explaining that. Then all our vasanas, what we have created in several lifetimes, is continue to create relationships, and when these vasanas are coming out, it manifests in the form of other personalities. And in order that the vasana to go through, you require that time with them, to spend that time with them in this long journey. And that is why we come as husband, wife, and children, and parents, and all that. All these relationships are born from that. There is no other explanation to that than this. If you understand Vedantam is very particular about these things, because you need an understanding. Where is this coming from? So, therefore, he says that emotions, what we have created inside, that has come out in the form, its external manifestation is this husband, wife, children, parents, everything. But the original seed of that is within you. Within you. And it is that, after they have come in this gross form in front of us, and to some people in that relationships, in the family relationships, to some people we feel happy with somebody. Some others we don't. If you look into your own family life, extended family and all that, you will see this playing, this game going on. To some members in the family, you feel a reasonably good relationship. Or you feel you are happy with them. They don't give you any trouble. Somebody else, you are always do not like them. Both these parties, to whom you are feeling happy, to whom you are not feeling happy, both of them are a manifestation of your own vasana, what you have picked up in your long journey through different bodies. Only thing is, they have taken a gross form and came in front of you. That's all at this point. So, and that is why to some people you are feeling happiness, and definitely with all of them, you have a relationship through this vasana. It is through that vasana that relationship exists. And they are a projection of us, projection of our own vasana. And if you want that relationship to change with them, correction is not in the mirror, correction is within us. That's where correction is required. Otherwise, it will break. Relationship will break. And you can notice also, at some time or the other, this relationship, what you have nurtured throughout your life, as father, mother, brother, sister, children, husband, parents and all that, someday it breaking and going away. Vichedam, it's called. Vichedam. So, that this truth, if you look into your own life, you can see it. You can see this happening in each one of us in our own life. Isn't it? You can see this. That they have come in your life at a particular time, and when that sankalpam or vasana is over, it has gone through that phase because of the power of the sankalpam, what it had to go through, that relationship also eventually drops away and you never have that relationship again, isn't it? It's like we talk about relation, family, this, that and the other. What does it all mean? In this body, Krishna has put us in this particular situation, all these things becomes important. But once it's gone, where is all gone? Where is father? Where is mother? Where is friends? Where is society? Where is children? Where is grandchildren? Where are all they? They're all gone in their own. All because of this. They had come into our life only because in some previous lifetime, we have created some vasanas inside, and the manifestation of that vasanas have come in this particular form as family members, friends, society, everything. After that, once that's over, relationship is also over. So, this principle, that is what he is saying here. Vishwam darpana drishyamana nagari tulyam nijandar gadham pashyan alpani mayaya bhairivot budham yadha nidraya. Nothing is a waste of time. We shouldn't think like that. Because every contact in this world with whom we have come into contact with and all that connections with them is a disturbance that has been inside us in the form of a vasana, and either that or another sattvika vigaram, sattvika emotions, what is inside us. Because these vasanas inside can be also under three modes, sattvika, rajasa, tamasa. When it is sattvikam inside, you will see that the relationships in a smoother level. When it is rajasam inside, there will be a lot of disturbances, and tamasam means it will end up in difficulties. So all these things are nothing but a projection of that emotion inside, of the sankalpam you had inside. Where is all this? It's all in your causal body, karana shariram. Remember the three bodies? Gross body, subtle body and the causal body. This causal body is packaged all this information inside. Our millions of lifetimes, all the vasanas what we have, and these vasanas maturing and which is interacting, all these things are stored and packaged and stored in the causal body called karana shariram. That's why it is called karana shariram. You see the word? Karanam. Karanam means the cause of everything. Cause of everything. So this also, in every incident in our life, is like this looking at the mirror. Is looking at the mirror. This is not a philosophy. This is the tattvam of the life itself. And each and every moment of contact is like this mirror. It's like this mirror. That is why first thing we have to know is this world is a mirror. The world is a mirror. We have to understand that, what it means. That is why that first two words, Vishwam Darpanam. Vishwam is a Darpanam. Vishwam is a Darpanam. In other words, that something that is inside us has come in a form and standing in front of us. All, everybody, for every one of us. Something inside us has come and stood in front of us. So actually when you are looking at that person, what you are seeing is something what you have in your own inside. Isn't it? So that you can see also, because same person, say four people see one person, four people see him in different ways. One person, if four people look at him or her, four people get different reactions about that person. Four people see him in four different ways. Why is it so? That's because of this. Because the vasana inside us is different even though person is one. And that is where that difference comes in our relationship with that person. In material life, we try to keep the relationships going somehow. Isn't it? There we have to use all our diplomacy, politics, and all kinds of tacts and whatever we do to keep the relationship going. But if you understand this, what the Krishnamurti is saying here, that Vishwam, Darpanam, this relationship, if you know these things, then you won't get close to anybody. There is no meaning, because that person in this life has come only as a manifestation of some emotion I had inside me at a particular time. Once that emotion is corrected, then that person is gone from inside. It's gone from inside. So, that person, and that person there, and the emotion I am experiencing inside from that person has no relationship. Has no relationship. So, he is only, or she, is only a symbol of that thought what is inside. Because the person you are seeing outside, one who is seeing outside, he is seeing that person who is inside, outside in that form. It's too subtle thing to completely analyze it. It's too much for to mind to. Only thing is, all you can do is, if you have a little thinking nature or analyzing nature, and if you have that subtlety inside, you can analyze situations in life and see how true these statements are. But that requires, you have to move away. With your all your emotions and fire inside, if you analyze it, won't work. Only in a very peaceful state, if you analyze it, you will see these facts make sense to everybody. So, I think it's 11:30, we'll stop now. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Tomorrow we start at earlier, it's at 6 o'clock in the morning, we start. 6 to 11 tomorrow. Yeah.